And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Dylan.
And I'm Tom.
And today we bring to you a... I'm sorry, guys. We actually bring you a depressing conversation topic now. I had to resurrect Dylan for this cast because, look, we're here to discuss a regret of the faction.
You mean a regret?
Regret.
A
retribution. We've decided, finally, to give Retribution exactly the faction review they deserve. So, speaking of which, I've brought Dylan and I've brought Tomo, both of whom are local rep players.
If you can call Dylan a rep player anymore.
That's right, I
don't
think I'm
I mean, to rephrase, I brought two Ron players with me to try and explain how to play Ron. Also, possibly by accident, the rest of the faction, but mostly just Ron. So, speaking of which, I guess before we get into how crappy this faction is and its great 22 win percent in most conventions, Dylan, how'd you get into Retribution? Sorry, Rontribution.
Well, I tend to get pretty obsessed about games. So the first thing I did after I decided I was going to get into War Machine was check out a few factions. And Ret was the sneaky bastards who like to assassinate their opponents. And that's really, you know, that's right up my alley. So I immediately picked up some Regretribution and... began playing. There was really nothing to it after that. I don't think I've picked up Circle since then, but I don't
and
really
Cricks.
Play it.
And
Cricks, yeah. But,
as soon as Mark 3 happened, it got dropped.
That's right. I only picked up Cricks to win because we're going to the WTC, and by God, I wasn't going to play against Pecathrall spam if I didn't have my own Pecathrall's. But yeah, then I immediately went back to Ret at the start of Mark 3, so... Yeah, I never seemed to get distracted.
We were convinced that, like, Kaelissa might have been the best best caster at the time.
She was definitely...
early Mark III.
She was easily in the conversation at the
start. She was incredibly good in the Ret Mirror, which was important because the Ret Mirror happened quite a lot.
That's right. In fact, it was the Kaelissa Mirror in the finals, right?
Yeah. Well, actually. Yeah. I think I remember you winning that off the back of, I have Electromancer, like, what are those?
That's
like,
right.
Well, what about yourself, Tomo?
So I've been playing the game for going on 8 years now, and I played a swath of factions, Ret being my first. So I started out playing Trolls and Cygnar simultaneously, and was really bad with both of those. I then played a bit of Circle for a while, and really fell in love with TK, went back to Cygnar, fell more in love with TK in the form of E. Haley, and then continuously had my shit pushed in by Dylan at every local event ever. And... sort of as our local meta evolved and the opportunity came up to buy a Ret army, I jumped on it and have never looked back. And since then, I've loved the faction. I played a lot of Assyrian Mark II, and then since Mark III started, I play a lot of Ran and a lot of Virus II, as well as Assyria.
Yes. And for our part, we're basically the
victims.
There's a
victims.
Reason. Yes.
So well, Brian, how does that make you feel?
Not every meta has
fine.
Dylan Simmer, so if you can point us to a meta that doesn't have Dylan Simmer and make sure that it's not our meta, that'd
no,
be quite
it was really bad because Dylan wasn't in the meta for like hasn't been in like the last like year almost, and then I go to WTC and play Ron and I'm like, fuck, what is this guy doing? And then immediately died.
Yes.
It's important to have Dylan. He inoculates you.
He does. It's just like.
And
it's like malaria almost. It's like if you don't know, you don't watch yourself, you don't keep up your intake, you don't like get your you know, just be really careful about what you touch and where you move your models and go around, you just die. And then you die again, and then you get dragged across the table, and then you die a third time.
Fair and balanced.
Yeah.
So
well, it's fine if you know how to play it. If you set up your list right, if you take the right tools in your list, you can actually play that game. And then Ron has a much more fair game.
Yeah, he has to
guys,
wait until
guys,
turn
promised,
three.
We promised we would do Ron last.
Okay, so before we get that, I'd just like to go over some general concepts with Ret. Namely, to me, at least as the outsider looking in, basically to me, Ret have a lot of models that are best in class. Dawnguard Sentinels, quite arguably, best single wing melee infantry in the game. I really struggle to...
Think of a better one? Yeah, it's pretty hard.
I mean, Themes and stuff may push Banes up, perhaps, but then the day...
I think Sir Texas are in the conversation.
Sir Texas are, sure, but they're Sentinels, man. Like, they just have all the rules you want, and they have all the things. House Guard Halberdiers are the best of the shit tier, which is effectively single wound.
They're the best
shield.
We don't even have to talk
there
about
might,
it.
Yeah, no. ATC clearly proved that the way to go is triple halberds, double fucking AFGs.
They're a good spam unit. They're decent, survivable. They do decent work. They're decent.
If you're looking to deliver a very fast alpha that has a fairly consistent range of stats that it's fighting against, I think, yeah, they're going to have a place, but long-term fight into a very diverse meta, you're going to struggle with that type of archetype.
Sure, but I think they're literally designed for fast strike, early win.
The main problem is that, and it's one of the things we'll get into, is you just have to recognize that these days that doesn't carry a game. Whereas on the other hand, Sirens, which are probably the best melee light in faction, in like their class...
They have a gun.
Yeah.
And what a gun.
And what a gun is. They have a random RFB gun for no reason.
And then they have a character unit, a character Jack special ability just built in.
Yes.
Yep.
Just by accident, in case you forgot to bring...
And balance.
In case you forgot to bring RFP in one of your lists. Like, Retribution have a lot of models that are just quite above the curve, and by contrast, a lot of their casters seem to be either on the curve or below. A lot of them, honestly, have the problem or reputation of just being boring, which you'll notice is a bit of a questionable thing, especially given how fucking enamored both of you are about Ron. And it's one of the things I've noticed with Rhett is that if you get a caster who's above the curve with models that are also above the curve, you can make it all fit together. It just feels like just bullshit.
Cheating.
Play. It really does feel like cheating.
Yeah, I would say that Rhett's general and elitist faction, but you do pay a lot of points for this stuff. And you also don't tend to have the best things in general. So with synergies, there'll be everything that beats your stuff. Like, for example, many factions have better shooting, but they don't come that good. They become better. Like, Joe was a great example before Joe became plus two. And even arguably with plus two, he's that combo rifles is still better. Right? They're still very good, right?
Well, they're better than riflemen, unless you're going into stealth and then...
But no one takes Rafferman. Yes. Let's discuss that, really. But at the end of the day, you're really comparing that to Mage Hunters.
That's because Assyria ruined that.
Yeah, yes. So, at the end of the day, everything's a little bit more expensive. Like, even the Halberdiers, right? The full package is, what, 22 points? Like,
21 at the moment. 21. As it says, if you want to throw us at the Solus in there, you're looking at 22, which is...
Yeah, so 21 points, right? That's a lot of points, right? Why aren't you just taking Sentinels at that point, right? So... And your Jacks are extremely good, but they're also on the expensive side. Like, just look at a Banshee.
Your entry point for a heavy is 13 points.
Yeah, which is a sphinx.
A rifleman boat's the same points.
Yeah.
With Joe and a whole bunch of other shit. But the difference is that you don't have a lot of cheap options at times. Like, there is no real, like, juggernaut-type model in Red. No. It's the equivalent of a sphinx.
How many points are... Yeah, sphinx.
Which is, while it's 13. Good, it's 13.
That's not
it does
too
still,
bad.
It still needs, like, an
And you have
to
sirens. Just... That seems plenty cheap.
And I think we'll get to that later, but I think...
You still do need an Arcanist, right?
Yeah. So an 8-point package is really a 10-point package. Maybe free if you're fixing your theme force points badly. So really, a siren, great, and it has changed, from my opinion, the faction identity. And we'll get into the problems of that later, but definitely sort of opens up that space.
The second thing, this is probably actually tying into that, because I know one of the common problems is that people complain you're not allowed to take Via Jackson Forges. Yes, there's a really fucking good reason why.
No,
because the thing is, Retribution actually have quite well-designed themes. They actually, to me, rival Trolls in how like they're kind of designed, because the basic idea is that they have actual theme kind of balance that you'd sort of want. Via Jacks are above the curve, which is why you're not allowed them in the Jack theme, because the Jacks that you do get in that Jack theme get an incredible, like a fucking insane bonus.
Yeah, and generally the Jacks you have access to are a little bit below the curve. Like, I would say that although very good, like, you can't build an army out of Phoenixes, they just don't cut it, right?
Yeah, you need...
They're a little expensive, they can do work, but they don't do as much work as what you pay for
utility.
Them.
Utility, you want one utility Jack, right?
Yeah,
you don't
agree.
Want a whole army of them.
Yeah. Right, so, like, sometimes you just want... You basically just want a Juggernaut, and it's like, well, you don't get a Juggernaut. You have to take, like, a Hydra or a Sphinx or something like that. You have to have this heavy with a gun. And let's be honest, Crush Hydra, pretty okay. Like, aggressively okay. Range 15, 17 sometimes. Power 17 also, sometimes 19. Quite a good place to be. But sometimes, like, Rhett tends to lack the ability to take model, like, just generic... non-multi-purpose heavies, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why the Vial lights are such a good deal, is because they're priced as if they were generic lights, but they have ubiquity that most other things get.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
I agree with that.
But their intent is also that you don't get to take in the Jack theme, because the Jack theme is, like, if you gave them Shield Guard, and frankly, also you gave them those stupid Arcanist dude mans, the ones with, like, 7 points with power booster, you're like, good luck with that.
Yeah, the benefits are too good for Jacks that good. And it makes the Shael Jax a lot more playable.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes them feel...
It gives them an identity.
Yeah.
Bioshock's also...
I mean, that's what a theme is literally designed. This is the Shael theme! We should put Fire Jax on. Are you fucking kidding? From a fluff point that makes, like, zero sense.
Yeah. And it's like when you look at Gorshade 3... Gorshade 4 when we get to him. There's a reason why Gorshade 4 doesn't work with the Fire theme. Sorry, the Shael theme. You're just like... This was designed to, like... actually designed with themes in mind, which of course makes it complete garbage because it's just not getting everything you want and free points.
Yeah, I was going to say that you probably don't even have to talk about the lights. If you just talked about the Banshee, like just having the Banshee in that theme would be enough.
As a heavy closer for like a virus list, for example, or putting into a run list, or anywhere, like
usually
the discerning elf appreciates the Banshee for what it is.
Momentum. That gun is so fucking fantastic.
We kind of do forget about it from time to time with all this AFG nonsense and all these other things, but the Banshee was.
I mean, the gun has been superseded in terms of absolute bullshit, but I mean, it took a POW 20 range 10 smite gun to do it.
Yes.
And for Dylan, that's on the new Kator Battle Engine. It's amazing.
It's so much fun, isn't it? I mean, kind of like a Banshee gun, to be fair.
Yeah, but the Banshee gun doesn't slam heavy.
No, it doesn't. Well, we might as well talk about free points. So we've got four themes in Ret. Sirens of Retribution, Sirens of Ios, Refugees of Ios.
It wasn't hard.
Yeah.
One job, Chris.
I did. Okay, Forges of War and Legion of Dawn, I think it's what it's called. Yep. Legions of Dawn, that's it. So, to me, like, we might as well go through the themes. I figure it'd basically be a good way of phrasing which kind of classes seem to work into them, because to me, a lot of ret and list building comes down to the caster fitting in theme sort of thing, which is kind of like, I mean, Issyria is an example we'll get into later, but Issyria, for instance, has a lot of themes she can fit into, but I feel that she fits best in, for instance, the second themes.
I don't know if anyone remembered the order, Chris. Yeah. Just actually, so we're talking about names.
She fits quite well into... She fits incredibly well into Shadows. I know that she sees play in Refugees of Ios, but she also just works quite well in Legions of Dawn.
You mean the faction she belongs to within the Retribution?
Sure, yes.
Fluff bunny!
I mean, end of the day, she does make quite a good... Like, she makes the Marshall Siren even better.
She makes fucking Sentinels and Desters and everything else in that list just hit even harder and even farther and even more accurately.
And not die as much. Alright, so we should talk about Shadows of Retribution. It was, for the longest time, your Crick's Answer, because it had RFP, and when Ghost Fit was a thing, it was quite good. It had Spears of Syra, which have been colloquially renamed as the Slots of Syra, because we can't fucking get rid of them. They're just really annoying. It is a theme that is...
Are Slots known to be really hard to get rid of?
I don't know.
Good question.
Actually, Hills Boy, you're the one who came up with that nickname.
Why did I call them the Slots of Syra?
Yeah.
Well, I thought really deep and hard about this, and I sort of went with the fact that it's a unit of three girls, and they put out like no tomorrow.
Well played.
That's a much better reason than Davies.
Yes.
If we're talking about Shadows, though, we should really go through what makes that list so unbelievably fantastic, and it isn't just the things that you...
I was going to say ranged RFP is pretty fucking good. What? No, it's melee.
So one of the benefits being that you do get takedown on warrior model infantry, as well as getting +1 to your starting roll, free points. That's just a combination of things that really push it.
Free Iris is good.
I think it's the free points, because when I saw that thing come out, I said to myself, that's crap. And then I thought to myself, well, Dylan, you should just play it, because... Look at the number of free points you get, right? You can get free Narn, you can get free Iris. Just do that, get the maximum number of free points, because as a great man, Jack once said, anything's good if you just throw free points at it, right? It doesn't matter. You can have whatever crap model, but if you have enough free points, you'll win the game.
See the next thing, for instance.
That's right. So I was like, okay, let's see how many free points you can get. And I think I was doing 15 or 16, I can't remember off the top of my head.
So if you're going with... Iris 1, 7, Narn is 6, so 13, and then a Mage Hunter Assassin, 17 points.
Yeah, 17.
And that's pretty normal for a...
Yep.
All value.
Yep. So
they're all bad models.
17, that's right.
They're all bad models.
Iris 1 is, like, worth 7 points, or at least she used to be.
Not anymore. We'll get into that here. But then you just play the list, and you realize you've got a whole bunch of Mage Hunters, which are still really good against War Machine.
Yep.
and you've got a Syria, and by accident your whole army is stealth, and you've got some shield guards in case anyone goes to kill a Syria, which will happen a lot because you'll be killing everybody.
And if they're shield guard, they're going to go buck wild the next turn.
That's right. Yep. So you get the threat extension because they were back there doing nothing, and now surprised they're charging a colossal. Like, that's just, it's all good. And you can do the Hyperion version for something that's hard to kill, or yep. You could do a couple of heavies if you want the Arc node. Like, do whatever you want. This list is actually very flexible, and it has so much power behind it, and a lot of AD shooting, which is my favourite shooting in the game. Mm. It usually means you absolutely. Get to shoot one extra turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you go second, get to shoot a whole bunch of things down, that's just the greatest feeling ever. So you feel like you're a turn up on your opponent.
There's something special about shooting a colossal off the table at the top of two.
There is. So the theme itself doesn't really appear to be powerful because it's not taking stuff that's traditionally, in Mark III at least, considered to be powerful. Mage Hunters took a big step down after Mark II. But just because they hate so much on Warjacks, even with three or four left, they can all charge Jack, and, you know, that's...
Do fun. Some
and
actual
I, and
work.
I think the fair comment to make, too, would be that you're not just looking at hate on Warjacks, but any Warbeasts that aren't exceptionally high armored still will take hits enough that they don't really want to play into that list.
Signs and portents, Powtens can do work.
And certainly their support will get minced, even if the even if you've got a Tibbers, right? All of their Beast Handlers are probably just dead because... Basically, your Mage Hunters just go around them.
And then Tibbers has to deal with the fact that he's going to cop two Mage Hunter Assassin charges under feet, which are going to do... Not all the time, all of Tibbers, but let's face it. When it's going to make your opponent like really sad, it's going to do all of Tibbers.
That's right. And that's what makes the list really good. It's the old... the old Raven theme, if you guys remember. The old, like, if it dies to power 10s, it's going to be killed by that Raven theme.
Mm-hmm.
I even forget what it's called now. Because
Will of Nine Voices.
Will of Nine Voices. Yeah, it's Will of Nine Voices all over again, except it's got a better caster behind it, which is Assyria instead of Raven. So.
You can play it with different casters, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
No, I don't think you can. That list is pretty much just like the territory of Assyria.
I think I know exactly why you're getting to it.
Well, it's because Aussie got nerfed.
Yes, and that's the only reason why. Otherwise, you could have played Aussie with that list.
I was actually going to say one of the reasons why it also works with Assyria is because Assyria shuts down one of its weaknesses, which is just
stealth.
Like carpet bombing, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because basically, she, at the end of the day, has blinding lights. So even if your opponent takes models to carpet bomb that, they'll probably only get like one turn, maybe two turns if they're lucky, of carpet bombing before their primary means of delivering that gets shut down by a blinding light.
And
just dead. Because that's another thing, too. Is like,
the fact
I can't blind...
gets rid of stealth was also a very big deal for them.
Like, it was a mental thing. Just like, all right, I mean, you had a game yourself at Clash, right?
Tom.
Explain it, please.
So, it was a game against Craig, who I played a number of times, like, really cool dude. And he played Durst into me, had the fortunate position of having ADR, and subbed in a bunch of deliverers in lieu of a couple of heavies, I believe. And so, I was playing, like, Shadows from a game against two Colossals to all the AD light-armored infantry into a Colossal that shot nothing but AoEs and units that shot nothing but AoEs. And one of the things that you sort of need to acknowledge with the series is that if you play it right, and really just a bit of elbow grease will get you to this point, a lot of AoEs won't do enough work against all of the dudes over time. And if you can play the game right where you're not losing things fast enough, that game becomes super oppressive on the scenario side of things really quickly.
Yeah, you can, like that one you were explaining to me earlier, one of the reasons why you ended up winning that was because Craig basically felt compelled to put no spells to stop you from blinding his colossal, so then you predictably just fucked his colossal up and you half killed it?
Okay, I half killed it. And it's one of those, like, I mean, we can get into it once we talk to it about Assyria, but it's one of those things where the strength of that feat is that you're going to, your end game is to make the game too hard for your opponent to play.
Yeah.
Like, if you can do that, you're going to have a pretty great time. And all that feat was used for in that particular game was half killing a colossal and telling it to go away. Because if it was moving anywhere further, it was going to be charged by a bunch of things it didn't want to be charged by. If it moved it further back, it wasn't becoming relevant. If the choir sung no magic, then it was going to get shot. If it was going to get no shooting, it was going to get magicked. It was just a damn... And if you are careful about the way that you construct, play, execute that list, it is a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation with things that don't look like they're going to do much on paper.
I mean, it reminds me of a lot of other good themes where it successfully combines the high armor, low defense of Warjacks with high defense, low armor infantry to make a nice balance of what stats you need to kill what models with.
Correct.
That's right. I think a lot of people also overestimate how good AoEs are in general.
Yep.
Even in the past, like, you look at something where you have, like, a generally good AoE gun. I think the Vanquisher might be a good example.
Conquest. Well, Conquest.
Conquest, yeah. Vanquisher. But then you look at how many models that particular gun has to kill before the Jack makes back at points, right? And at the end of the day, you get maybe two shots off, and then you're going to die, right? You're just in range of absolutely everything, if not after the first shot, right? You might not even get one shot off at this point, right? Because there's so many guns pointing your direction. Like, Meroth, yep, sure, but you're just not going to get there, right? You better kill, like, a whole unit. How are you going to do that? Like, there's just no way that one Vanquisher kills a whole unit strike force without getting charged or basically killed before that.
Yep. It's one of those ones where, psychologically, as the rep player, you've just got to appreciate the fact that you're going to lose models, but you've got to also position so that you don't lose enough models that your opponent is just going to still fuck you.
That's right.
I think people overestimate AoEs because they've always had that one or two games where AoEs were just the best thing ever
for
their opponent, where they hit every critical model, where they got way more models because it drifted in just the right
place.
Right,
yeah. Scattered on the Iris, just, rolled the seven, killed her.
You have to respect an AoE, but at the same time, you have to learn that it's unavoidable, and it is a random roll that can completely dick you or completely do nothing.
And you're always going to lose dudes in a matchup, and you've got to evaluate what is the worst way to lose dudes. Is it a method that has absolutely no counterplay that will consistently do it? Something like E-Leaps compared to AoEs. And I think that you've now got a sort of that indiscriminate killing machine, one of which is totally built for the game that it's playing in, and the other one which is sort of requiring you to do with a combination of rolling dice and getting the right direction.
Yeah, I would also say that this kind of ties back into the general RET overview we did earlier, and that RET doesn't like to lose units.
No.
And now, that's a bit of a stupid thing to say in general, because nobody likes losing units. But RET in particular, if you take out a significant chunk of the RET army before they've had a chance to
do any work,
you just won the game. There's often not much the faction can do to come back. There's just not enough attacks in the faction. There's not very many models with multiple attacks.
Mm.
And the ones that do have a very short range, there's not much chance to make your value back. And there's also a lot of luck in general. Like, Rhett's got a lot of map 6 attacks, in particular the Jacks, and a lot of rat 5 or 6. So, yeah, 5 or a lot of the Jacks. You just miss a few critical shots, you're done, right? There's not a lot of leeway to stay in the game, let alone make it back.
And I think that's actually a really good segue to start talking about Refugees of Ios.
Yes.
In terms of that paradigm of things that are difficult at recovering their points back and require good rolls make significant work.
You mean halberds?
Yes.
Because I was going to say, like, there's a lot of segue points to halberds, models that don't get their points back, models that die to everything.
Now, Chris, there's only one way to play RET, and it is 30 halberds with 2 AFGs and Alara 2.
For one, that's a lie.
And you shut your whore mouth.
It's 36 halberds. And 38 halberds, because you've got the two, like, fuckers that follow them around. And for 2, that's also not a way to play RET. That's a way to lose a lot of models really quickly.
It's a way to play shit Kador, is what that is.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, look, I can tell you, if we're going about shit Kador, like, the main thing that the Manowar CID have gotten is that it gives you an Iron Fang theme, and guess what? It makes it a million times better by removing all the Iron Fangs. It just gives you all the cool solos.
And that's a world that nobody wants to live in.
No.
Except for Kador players.
Exactly. And like you basically... So Defenders of Ios is its actual term, and it basically has a bunch of House Guard buffs that are, on paper, quite good. I mean, everyone is just...
On table, it's not that bad either.
It's really not that bad.
It's okay. The main problem is that the game as a whole is just not favoring halberds. Like, what they do is just not something the game itself wants, which is effectively shield wall, melee infantry that get cleaned up after they go in.
And I think that you and I talked a lot about this a while back, So I spent a lot of time trying to build lists for Defenders because a lot of people were talking about it. It seemed like I had a lot going for it. The model selection in that theme is spectacular.
Oh, yes.
But I couldn't really connect the dots to make a list that had, like, a clear to victory route. And I think the problem with that is that you've got this unit, which are meant to be the all-encompassing melee output unit of that list, which are your halberds, and really you can hit one turn of attacks with them, and then they die. They don't have that sticking power that you want out of 36 infantry, like you would with, say, Satixus or Banes.
Yes.
Or even, within an in-faction comparison, Sentinels.
Yep.
Now, like really like, and I'm sure you guys are in the same thought process as me, but like you, and I can see why she's so damn sexy, which is Lara too. And I played her today, and I'm like, look, I really enjoy her, but not in that particular theme. And it's because you get like one turn of going buck wild with power 16s, and then you're stuck with power 10s that will die to a stiff breeze.
Yeah, that was actually the main frustrating thing I've noticed playing against Defenders of Ios, is that if you go in with halberds, even if you don't get them all cleaned up, the follow-up turn is just not good.
No.
Because you're often in melee, so you're generally power 10, maybe combo to power 12, maybe you get a couple of charges off to get a power 14, and that's kind of it.
Well, the list seems to just be heavily weighted on its alpha, so if it's out, like, more so than even Assyria.
Yes. Yep. Which is why you can play it in Assyria to double down, but that's a really bad game against, like, a lot of good players, because a lot of good players won't feed you their entire army.
No.
They'll respect... Like, with these kind of long-range threat lists, you actually just got to appreciate that you can't beat the threat game. If you're playing Khajiit into, like, House Guard, you won't out-threat them ever.
One of the key things about that, too, is that you'll find it when you play Retribution, you're used to the 18-inch threat of a lot of your stuff. Like, I play a lot of Ran, you've got long threat ranges on your jacks, and you can do pulls. And you play Syria, you can long threat ranges against infantry because you've got all these 18-inch shots with your strike force.
Even Virus with Griffins, you're looking at 13 inches base.
That's threat. Right, and that's like that's going to kill heavies and stuff. And then you go look at this list and you're like, okay, so I can get my 15 inches or whatever on my halberds, but that's less than the strike force, and I'm going to need still 6 or 7 of them to kill a heavy. So what happens? What the theoretical thing which always happens is, you run up first turn, and your opponent runs, and then they've put you, like, their heavies in range of 3 or 4 halberds, you know, and the front couple of infantry in range. Do you charge? Like, you've got, like, 8 attacks you can make, right? Do you feet? Because you need to feet to get in range, like, of more stuff.
Yep.
But it's not that much. So maybe you get a full unit of halberdiers charging for your feet, and 2 units do nothing, right?
Yep.
What do you do there? Like, do you go in, and then you lose the value in the feet, or do you wait, and he kills a whole bunch of your stuff? And he's going to do the same thing to you next turn. He's going to sit a little bit out of range. He's going to kill as much as he can. Maybe you get a little bit more on the heavy. Maybe you kill it. Maybe you don't. If you don't, you're dead.
Or you make the quote-unquote smart play, which is back it up. And what will wind up happening is that they'll sandpaper a bit out of each unit. And the second that those units hit 7 models, they're going to feel really light really fast. And that threat range is going to be irrelevant in the game that you're playing.
That's right.
Yep.
Yep, and you get far ahead to score. A bunch of other things pile up. So essentially, you're playing the threat range game, but you would have been better off playing just another list with a better threat range that found it easier to do things with that better threat range, right?
Yes. Now, we've spent a lot of time beating up on this like particular theme force, and it has some great things. I mean, like, it getting does. AFGs in a theme that are contributing to 3 points are wonderful.
We've beat up on halberds. Now, I played a list which I loved against Chris.
Oh, yeah, this one.
Yeah, and that was a Gorshade list, which I made as a joke and turned out to be quite okay.
Which I still don't understand how it works.
I mean, it basically... I can explain exactly how it works. It's like, no, fuck off. Like, said in a million different languages with a translator for every language.
That's
it
right.
Says no spells, no charging, no fun. Feet says no, more no, 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 no. You do anything, no. You're Gorshade. You interesting, no. To me, Defenders of Ios, realistically speaking, is about as close as you can get to playing irregulars without actually being in mercs. It has a very wide selection. And I feel a lot of people hone in on the halberds because you get bonuses for playing halberds. Whereas
particular, it's not just the halberds, it's the triple halberds with 2 AFGs seems to be what I see a lot of. And I just can't see how that game consistently plays against an army for 7 turns.
The catch is, right, is that, like, acknowledge when halberds are good. Because halberds do have their place. It's just 30 halberds don't, really.
Yeah.
30 halberds are, like, maximum overkill. Whereas a lot of defenders lists I've known about are basically built off the back of AFGs and the Via Harpies.
Mm.
Because it turns out the AFGs buff the Harpies because the Harpies have a really aggressively standard gun. So clearly, the only thing to do is make it more egregious. Because you know what? Range 12 Thunderbolt, you might accidentally push your opponent out of range if you sit at, like, 12. Very big a mistake. But if you have a range 14 now, that's quite a bit better. That's even more leeway to push stuff out of
range. And you are playing a list which has also randomly scored itself a free Pain Knight.
Yes.
And has Electromancers to clean up whatever comes near you and things.
Yeah.
That's fucking magical. A free fucking Pain Knight.
Jesus. Oh, it's beautiful.
And best free model.
Oh, yeah. I go to sleep thinking about it.
I mean, Defenders realistically, apart from the halberd benefit, and this is something you got to understand, is that Defenders doesn't really do much, but it does give you a free Pain Knight.
That's
so,
right.
If, like, a regulars does only a small amount to benefit your army, your main benefit is you just get a lot of free value. Similar thing here.
And it is probably the place that most opens up things like the Harpy itself. I think that Jack solely has a place in... If you're trying to play multiples of them, the place to play it is with an AFG. Because yes. then you're building a fairly respectable gun line that isn't doing a lot of damage, but is like contributing a lot to scenario and control-based games.
Yes. Yeah. And AFGs are what they are. Like, AFGs are...
Yeah, they're dumb.
They're quite stupid.
They're really dumb.
Yep. I actually would say that here in Defenders, I really wanted to play those lists with Assyria at the helm, but I couldn't because I was playing
in Shadows. It's too strong.
It's just too strong. So, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, at the end of the day, it does do some very powerful things, but there is stuff which Retribution has never really struggled to do. You know, decent shooting, decent threat range.
Drop
you know,
a heavy.
Drop yeah, a that's heavy. Right, drop a heavy. Like,
Alpha
really,
heavy.
Shaz can do that already, right? Yeah. But what you really need is, like, you know, the full stealth, or you need to be able to see through stealth, or you need something, you need to solve a problem which yeah. Retribution has in order to have a place in your pairing.
So I guess we'll move on then to Forges of War, which is
speaking about solving problems.
That's right, solving problems. So, well, your problem is usually the enemy caster.
Yes. So Forges of War is sort of the domain of Ra'an, as many, like, it is one of the possible knocks against Ra'an is he kind of only, if he goes into any other theme apart from Forges, he feels like he doesn't really have a feat. I've seen lists with like Defenders where he basically is there to TK forward like battle engines and just basically threaten to kill classes. Sure. And you're like, yeah, sure. It's that thing. It's like, I guess. And maybe he does a cute thing where he feats in a Nis priest shoots a bolt.
We laugh at it, but at the same time, like I was saying, I had a Gorshade 4 list, and Gorshade 4 doesn't have a feat or anything. TK is probably better than his whole toolkit, right?
Yeah.
If you just read TK and had 8 focus, the Gorshade 4 would probably be better than he is now. Like,
I agree.
The one thing he does have going for him is being the only model sculpted after Benedict Cumberbatch.
That is
I mean, to be honest, with Forges, I found it kind of disappointing for Ra'an. It is really strong. It gives Ra'an like a... And really, this list is for Ra'an and Helena, let's be frank.
Yes. And Varus 2.
Varus 2 is...
Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about Varus 2. You're totally right there. But Varus 2 in that list kind of does the same thing as Helena.
Yeah.
So that you can almost count them together. But he reduces his assassination potential a lot because you don't get to take all those cool blessed models. You don't get to take all those cool threat extenders and jacks that do random stuff like the Banshee with the knockdown. So all your options are very limited, but you, in exchange, get a very, very powerful scenario game because you've got all these...
Battle mages?
Well, no, not battle mages. You've got all these models in your battle group.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, and you can, of course... I've forgotten the name of the spell for some reason, but... within 2 inches, push everything back.
Oh, Force Blast.
Force Blast. Oh, yes. Game-winning spell.
Game-winning spell, that's right. Now you've got, you know, 8 models in your battle group. That's
it's the, always the spell you forget on Ron's card.
That's right.
Yeah, the one that's like, oh man, all I gotta do is stop him from scoring that play. Oh, look, all my models are gone.
It is only usually cast to win the game, and for some reason no one remembers it until it's won the game against them, and they're like, oh yeah, that spell.
It's actually a funny spell. I mean, we'll get into Ron in a bit, but it is one of those spells that the more that I play that caster, the more that I've realised it is possibly one of the most broken spells on his card.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Often better than TK.
Because
it goes 4 inches.
You're pushing like 3 things 4 inches in like fun directions.
I mean,
there's only one spell maybe better than it, and it's Erupt. You know, what's it called? Or does Karchev have the same spell?
Doesn't it do
you can do it against other models in the battle group? Well, Ground Zero
is just on the cast.
Yeah. Well, so the only time I've ever seen Dylan actually cast it is on Ra'an.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's definitely been done to me multiple times. So the big difference between Ground Zero and Force Blast is that Force Blast is diceless.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it turns out 4 inches
the
is...
Does it require dice?
Always 4 inches.
Models that are within 2 inches of a battle group model.
No, I know with Force because it's not diceless, but
and
I mean...
Ground Zero is you have to damage them and it's D6.
So you have to damage them.
Yeah.
It's super sad.
In any case...
No, it's not that sad.
It
kills a lot of stuff.
It's on the caster island.
It's on the caster.
We're talking about Ra'an, and we're definitely not talking about Ground Zero.
I can't believe we just spent 2 minutes in Ground Zero.
Does Red even have that spell? I get the feeling they must
have it. Yes, we do. It's on Thar.
Oh, Pyron, yes!
And if anybody's going to win a game with Ground Zero, it's Siron.
I mean, he can sidestep into it. Anyway, Fortress has one of the big draw cards is you get the Arcanist unit, the like House Shaiul Arcanist, the ones that give you three extra power boosters, and it also has, let's be honest, Crush Hydras.
Chris, shut up, because that's not why I take the theme. That's
fine.
I don't think I've ever played that unit in the theme.
I don't think I've ever played that unit.
Yeah. Fine. Okay. fine.
Shut up. Let Tom talk about this.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so the big reason to take this theme is because it's really obnoxious on a whole range of levels. You've got... Okay. The first thing is that the three casters that you want to play with it, which are really Helena, Virus, and Ryan, all each come with one upkeep spell they don't really want to have to cast. Benefit of the theme is that it gives you that cast for free at the start of the game. So you get a polarity field, a synergy, and a rhythm of war right off the bat. Really nice benefit. The second being is that you get shield guard on all of your jacks.
All your shield jacks,
which are, yep, the only ones worth taking the theme. And the third being is that you get a bunch of free points. And when you add that equation to a caster like Ryan, Virus, Helena, those bridging points become all the difference. Now, Dylan and I both play, we'll get into it, but we play a list that involves Ryan abusing a Jack Marshalled Hydra off an Artificer. Now, that list probably wouldn't be as considerable if you were paying 5 points for the Jack Marshall.
That's right. You wouldn't even bother taking it, to be honest. And you see that in most cases, mainly for two reasons. The Jack Marshalls take it out of your battle group, and yep. The Hydra isn't good enough to be taken out of the battle group. It just isn't good enough.
Yep.
Especially considering you need to load it up. And, of course, it would then just be too expensive, yep. Right? So you've taken
it's a 20-point module that now costs you 15.
Well, it's more than 20, because
you've got
all those things. That's right.
So it's a 26-point module that costs you 15 in that list.
That's right, and you don't get all those battle group buffs. Okay, so now we've got Forges, where we get it for free, and, like, fantastic. It's still a shield guard. Awesome. You know, it gets all those free, like, regen if you need it.
It gets the focus off getting hit from being a shield guard. Solo sniping is less relevant against it.
It protects its own Jack Marshall, which is another very relevant thing.
It's the only Jack Marshalled Warjack in the game that can shake an effect.
Yeah, that's... True.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because it can keep focus.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yes,
it saves them pennies.
That's actually quite good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a phenomenal benefit in a theme that is already doing a lot to make those pieces work in a very non-linear, like, lateral way.
And you're often taking focus load off the caster.
Yeah.
In this case, both Ryan, Helena, and Virus all really want that focus load taken off them. So it's fantastic. It's
wonderful. And I can't say much more about Forge. I haven't been able to fault it yet. I played that list a lot, Chris. I took it to I took two lists in Forges, two OTC, both Ryan and Virus 2, and just it made money the whole weekend. I'm still playing that Ryan list and got second place in champs at CanCon solo listing with that Ryan list. So
I am amused by the reason he lost and the reason he lost against Whaley.
He's like, I was too successful on a slam and then got Terminus trapped.
Yes. He slammed 6 inches and it meant that Terminus got trapped. And of all the reasons to lose, like, it's a bit unfortunate, but it's also kind of funny. So.
Yeah. Look, it was a great game and I love playing as Whaley for the first time and I've got nothing bad to say about that. But really, the Theme Force, and which really surprised me when I try not to interact with the online side of things too much, unless I'm going for an obvious troll about how the fact that our faction can win games. I really don't understand why people aren't abusing this theme more and why it is actually perceived to be bad by the general consensus.
Especially with Helena, because I feel like it's a natural fit. Like, you can just imagine in your mind, previously, maybe get one Jack with its shields down that didn't quite kill from some shooting, but now every Jack just takes a hit and you regen all the shields up with your feet. That just seems absolutely bonkers amazing.
Yep.
And you've got some battle mages for some threat extension and killing some infantry. That just seems amazing. So many free points.
It just sort of works. Like,
it does.
It just...
There's nothing wrong with anything on that list and there's nothing to say that it's not a successful way to play.
I feel a lot of people get caught up on the fact that you can't take the Via Jacks and at the end of the day...
And people get hung up on the fact that you can't take a lot of units, and my return to that would be that Battle Mages are close to one of the best units in our faction. They're under-costed by it for what they do. And they, going back to the blast conversation from before, they're immune to it.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about it.
So they can sort of sit at the back of places and be fairly safe.
They also get reasonable death against shooting, which is valuable.
Death 15 is a really good place to be, especially for a unit that can hog terrain, because that, like, they also abuse a lot of combat rules. They have two attacks for some reason.
With beatback at power 11. And I don't know about anybody else, but I would pay 10 points to have a 2-attack beatback model in my...
I've lost an embarrassing amount of models to Battle Mage punches, especially when you forget about it, even though you've been victimized by it before.
Yep.
And then the Battle Mages themselves ignore a lot of rules because they use magic bolts, which means that they can be in melee and then just shoot out of melee or pull into other people's things and just do other random bullshit.
Which means that they're also playing to a lot of the problems the game's seeming to have at the moment, which is Incorp.
Yeah. We had a whole cast basically about, like, just the value of push models in the end game, right? Mm. And Battle Mages are probably one of the best push models in the game, period.
Right. Yeah.
Magic attacks do really help with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've saved my bacon a lot there. I think they're one of the only units with magic attacks on their fists.
On their melee. And they have two of them. Yes. At mat 6. So there's when push comes to shove, they're actually in some situations better at punching than they are at bolting.
Quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And it's something to appreciate with them. It's incidentally one thing that I've noticed with Rhett, just outside looking in, is you tend to accidentally solve a lot of problems other factions have.
Hmm.
All of your guns are magic on your Warjacks, for instance. You just have a lot of random rules are good. But you do pay for it.
That's right. That's the problem. You pay for too much. And that's the problem with Battle Mages, why you don't see them in more lists, is because you're paying for all those little things. And you just pay the extra point too many, whereas sometimes...
And they don't get supported by all but one caster, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I will say that I dislike how Forges is kind of cut down on some of the...
That's because they originally designed because it was literally all the eggs in one basket list design.
Yeah, and they...
Which is a detriment overall, but I mean, with that one list, it's...
But you look at sort of the way the PP designed that unit, and they do exactly what they were meant to do.
Yep.
They are randomly good at solving a very big range of problems.
Yep.
The one thing that they don't solve is stealth.
Which is good. They can't... They shouldn't charge it, right?
They have their fists.
Yep.
Lefty and righty.
Yep.
It's not... I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but when you look at that... there's a reason why they only play with one faction. It's because he literally does everything they want except for self-stealth. And you have somebody else who can do that. And she's probably not terrible with them either.
Assyria?
No, she's not.
No, she's not.
Assyria literally is the push button, everything gets better, okay.
Mm. Yeah, Assyria can probably just play in Forges just fine, let's be honest. It has Jax for
push button,
use.
Okay.
But doesn't she just die?
She has...
except she's surrounded by shield guards?
She still dies, right?
It's a joke.
No, I know it's a joke.
Okay, good.
I'm explaining for the people that in this podcast that are listening to this that actually believe that.
No one's listening to us. We're talking about retribution.
Regretribution.
The 22%.
Yes. Speaking of 22% and other terrible things, talk to us about Legions of Dawn.
I have been playing the bejesus out of this, and it's not making Sentinels any more interesting, but it definitely makes Sentinel about as hard as they possibly can. And there's the more that I'm playing this list, the more that I'm enjoying the depth behind what a range of other things outside of Sentinels can offer. I was playing this list with Virus 2 for a while, which I really liked. I was playing that with 7 Sirens, 2 units of Sentinels, and Call It A Day. And basically, if your opponent can't handle a whole army that threats about 10 inches, but then if it can, you're just going to get punched to death and siren shotted to death and whatever. It's going to be bad times.
That's not how that list works. That list has two methods of operating. Is it does it lead with its sentinels or does it lead with its jacks? And it doesn't matter which it leads with, because the other one usually can do the work it needs to. So the option is, which is the unit that's going to end up doing less work over the course of this game, and you lead with that.
And the answer is they both do all the work.
That's the problem.
The answer is you lead with the sentinels, and then you feet, and then midway through the opponent's turn, suddenly all your sirens
are
and your opponent realizes
that
they
made terrible
mistakes.
And then whatever sentinels are left gets a vengeance, kill something, and then charge to do more. It's fucking disgusting.
Even if the sirens are leading, there are still a couple of sentinels don't mind us, we're here.
Sirens are leading, but you still have to throw way more points at them than they're worth, because they're just like, that charge attack does nothing, shut up.
Yep.
And you're just
turn, you have to commit to killing one of those things at a time. Because
and then
if
a
you
sentinel
rando-
walks forward, and then you kill the Sentinel, and then they're like, yeah, now we all get to walk forward. Yeah.
And Dylan and I were talking about this before, and like, I love playing the virus feat. I think it's super interesting. But at the end of the day, that feat can be super successful. It can also do exactly nothing but shuffle a few dudes around, and then we still keep losing dudes. The thing that was really cool about that list was the fact that Virus, for the first time, had a combination of dudes, guns, and bots.
Yes.
And those guns are sweet.
They are. Much sweeter than I originally thought they were going to be,
too. Yeah. And, like, my fun anecdote about that particular list was that I played a game against King of Nothing at CanCon, a game that I like to refer to now as Stop Hitting Yourself, where I learned the interaction between cast gimps and siren guns, which cast gimps explode when they walk and interact with something, and siren guns make you walk. So if you can do the math, that equaled a lot of dead Grimkin models.
Those AoEs are really good. Yes. When cast gimps explode, they do a lot of work.
Yes. Yep. But that list, as I've been playing, I don't know, have you had any time playing it, Dylan?
I haven't. Not with the Sentinels. Yeah. To be honest, I'm not a huge fan of Virus 2, mainly because I feel like his feat is a little bit lackluster.
Sure.
With a lot of... it's a lot of fun to play, especially when you've got the creeping Imperatus, you know? But I don't really find that fun. So.
And it has applications, it also doesn't. Like, yeah. I'm not going to say it's, like, the best feat in the game. It's a feat, you can play it well, it can also do nothing.
It's a bit of a brick smasher, and sometimes you just don't need that.
Sure.
Well, it's not really a brick smasher, right? It's
a brick dodger, and it's kind of janky, and sometimes you, instead of walking your siren out of threat range, it gets charged by a cage rager.
A lot of things can happen with that. Often it's where you make one miscalculation and suddenly, like, you've moved your guy back and then your opponent shuts everything down. Yep. Says, nope, okay, that's totally. Done. Yep. Turned up, turned.
Yeah, you lose your feet. Or you feet and they do nothing and they just jockey out. And when you're playing that particular type of list, you're not jockeying with a lot of threat.
That's right. Often you're moving 5 inches forward, doing a couple of shots. And if it's against something that doesn't really care about those shots, like, for example, a convergence list with a bunch of shield guards in the form of those little...
And a bunch of dudes that can't be bone-shaked.
That's right. Then you're like, oh, okay, maybe this whole delay turn thing isn't working out, so, oh, look, can't feed it. Okay, I'm going to run away now. Like, that's kind of how it goes.
But the flip side of it is that I've been playing... I mean, three things that I thought that I would just never put in the same sentence, which is lots of Sentinels, Destas, and Alara. And... but I've been playing that list a fair bit lately, and one of the interesting interactions that I'm finding is that, I mean, Destas aren't nowhere near as terrible as I thought they would be, but the list also operates around, like, a cute little interaction, which is a Sayu with a Siren in that list, and doing the math on it gets kind of ridiculous when you start pushing the Siren up to a potential threat range of 16 inches where it becomes a Mat 8 Power 20 Blessed Magical Weapon Master. that charges for free and has 6 attacks.
Now has Flank. Flank is just one of those rules that... I mean, I remember a complaint that was going around, which was the caster in this case was like Sorcerer 3, but there were other casters like that. So Flank is a feat level effect. Correct.
Yes.
So, and the real catch is that, like, when the Dawnguard thing first came out, Sirens weren't a thing.
Yep.
Well,
Sirens are now...
They were in the pipeline.
Can I just point out that we're going to get through Virus 1 next?
Yeah.
Yes. But, I mean, yeah.
But quite seriously, I'm actually really interested by... Alara 2, I'm yet to be convinced, is one of our best casters, but the suite of rules that she offers are worth considering nonetheless.
She's fun. She's one of
our
fun.
There are easily three better casters than
absolutely,
her.
But she also has the ability to make one section of the table go absolutely crazy every turn, which is the combination of things like Boundless Charge, Mark for Death, and Scything Touch. Scything Touch, I would...
Well, she has a very good toolbox.
She has an excellent toolbox. The combination of Apparition and Blood Boon and Teleport are wonderful. We'll get to her in a bit, but I'm actually really impressed by how flexible a list that runs 22 Sentinels actually is. Because I'm not the biggest fan of just running swaths of single wound infantry.
Yeah, I actually think that Siren Jack Marshall also, like, the
Dawnguard Sire.
The Sire is also weirdly, like, actually quite a badass.
He's one punch man with a crazy stat line.
He's another Sentinel.
But he's also, when you're playing him with that Jack, he's standing behind a Jack that has Oracular Vision, that also has Iron Sentinel, so he's a 15-18 with five boxes.
Yeah. So he's slightly hard to kill.
He's slightly hard to kill, right? Yeah,
but he also...
He's a cool guy. He also has,
like, Righteous Vengeance he gives that Jack for extra random threat. And let's be honest, right? You're going to have to kill Sentinels at some point. Because the alternative is you just get wrecked by them.
It's going to move. Like,
yeah.
The hardest part's going to be getting flanked there. That's it.
Pretty much. And Sentinels...
And then it gets Boundless Charge, and then it charges, and then it goes 60
it's super
inches.
Fun. It's about, about the most fun you can have running a light.
Yeah.
Can confirm. In fact... The only sad thing is that I can't run that with, like, Little Alara.
Do you know Alara?
Because that would be the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. I still don't know if it compares to a Rattler on full.
Full conga line
is the most satisfying thing ever.
It's a light warjack that with next to no elbow grease will one round any colossal you put near it.
Yeah, it's very different. Like, a Rattler in that kind of situation is basically the as it just mulches an entire winning army. This one is more like, this little siren is going
to
kill the colossal.
So I guess you know what it's like to be a skin
of have one focus left over to oracular vision your warcaster charging.
He's the jazz man, basically.
Yes.
So it gets to know what it's like to be a skin of bones every day.
Sure, but it does it for 8 points and requires no focus investment.
neither does the skin and bones, but you know, I get your point.
It's a super efficient little package that runs in a list that has a saturation of targets that all do work. And I think that moving forward, like that particular theme is going to have to be very careful as to how it's balanced. I'm really looking forward to the CID surrounding Destas, because I think there's a lot of interesting things that they can do to Destas to make that faction open up.
Yeah, Destas are sort of Destas have rules that kind of just don't work together.
They're not like the game-winning piece, but they are a cool harassment unit that they take deciding touch like no tomorrow. They really threat a long way.
I've been playing Jeff, not as much recently, but like earlier this year, I was playing a lot more against him, and he really likes Destas. Like, they're not that bad. Like, they have a range game, and with the right pieces in the army, like Alara or Assyria, they fucking go a billion miles and hit like a truck.
That's exactly what most cav models want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They're one of Rhett's few catch up models. Like, remember I mentioned earlier, it's difficult to catch up sometimes in Rhett if you lose a bunch of stuff. Well, guess what? If you don't lose your Destas, they're one of the few things where if all the rolls go your way, and it's really not like you're essentially rolling a bunch of sevens, right? And if you roll like those 27s in a row, they're going to wreck some shit. Right?
Oh, yeah.
They're going to hit all those impact attacks. They're going to.
Put that power 14 where it don't belong.
That's
like,
right.
It's
going to be good. But sometimes they just miss that one thing and it all shuts down.
Which is
they're honestly a unit that if you got a quality of life buff, they would really take off.
Not having to pay, and there's no way to not pay to give them back unyielding.
Yes.
Which is now a much better rule than it used to be. And or fixing their gun. And I'm in the camp of I don't really mind Lance as a rule. I prefer it to go away, but got to live in the world where it might not. But something like giving them, I don't know, burst fire, where their guns could actually do work against heavies, would be kind of interesting.
I'd take away assault and give them dual attack, honestly.
Absolutely.
Like, anything like that. Like, that's a unit that works actually better than expected right now, so come the CID where they
quality of life will completely change that theme.
Yeah.
If they brought up to the level of the old Desta Thane, so the Desta Thane...
Yeah. Desta Thane was a cool guy.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. You can see him a lot, right? But whenever you play
him,
he's a cool guy.
Wow, that guy shoots a lot.
And
that
you.
I played him sometimes.
Yep.
Yep. And
he's really good.
And in a world full of Spread the Net, that guy is like the ultimate flag bitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I might have discovered the ultimate flag bitch.
Draken.
Also a really good flag. No, I was thinking Valka. Valka might actually just like to sit on the flag all day. Because he's like, okay, you come near my flag, I countercharge you. Okay, cool. Okay, you shot me. It's tough. You can't shoot me or spell me anymore. Okay, I stand up for free. And you come near my flag, I countercharge you. he plays that game all day.
Volko's the guy from what was it, Northkin?
I don't know if that's worth paying points for, but
I mean,
he is free.
You can take him for free.
He's the Northkin Viking cosplayer, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're all Viking cosplayers
at
that point.
More than most. Like,
well, no, that's because he's like Ragnar Chieftain Man.
Yeah, sure.
He's like 2-axe Berserker Man, yes.
Yeah. Cool cape, couple of axes.
Yeah,
good.
He's a cool model.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's. But he's not very good in the game, but he has this, like, one maybe cool trick.
You just sold me on him.
there's other solos and free points in that list.
Like
that just... They're not free points. No, but Rune Bearers, Champ Heroes are usually worth a lot. Sure. Falcon, like, it's hard to make, like, yes, he caps the flag like a master, but, like...
So do Bears.
All right, guys, I'm not going to lie, but we are talking about Resh.
Okay.
I know that we'd like to talk about better factions, like literally any other faction in the game, but...
Bears are the only faction in the
game. And don't have any bears.
There are Bears, and there are factions that don't have Bears.
And we're stuck talking about a faction which don't have Bears.
Let's talk about a guy with a bird.
Okay, fine. We're talking about Virus. So
to be fair, it's a really good bird.
So we normally go in caster order, but the first caster is Ron. I get the feeling that we'd probably just stop after talking about Ron, so I've actually moved him to the bottom of the list. And I've moved Virus 2 up after Virus 1 because that made almost no sense. So
well,
that's
how
one...
alphabets work.
That's right.
Yeah, and how PP deems the alphabet.
A lot of P is definitely at the start.
Well, no, it's because he's
Run,
Dawnlord Virus.
Yeah. And then Virus is at the bottom because they don't use his title, they use his name.
Virus Incisar of the Dawn Guard or something. So let's just talk about Dawnlord Virus, who Virus 1, I don't know what he does.
His feet is flag.
His feet is a theme benefit, and I guess that's where we're at with him.
A theme benefit? No, it's a Sorcerer's...
Sorcerer 3 Field Marshal.
Yeah, that's right. It's a Field Marshal. Your feet is a Field Marshal. How does that feel?
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
but the conundrum that we're in with this particular caster is that he actually... the biggest push that he offers is a theme benefit, and that's where I'm stuck at with him at the moment. Mobility's cool. IR is cool.
Mobility is not cool. On a 6-focus caster, even in ret with your focus saving, it's just not...
So
I don't know. It was fine when the list was double Hyperion or double Helios. And then he's like, yeah, 3 focus to make those go real far. And then I don't have to put that much focus investment to fuel 2 huge bases. But that list is not quite in fashion anymore.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree.
But there is lists that he makes work.
Yeah, and everybody loves flank.
Yeah,
everybody does.
Flank, and it's a whole.
And
like,
it's pretty not hard to flank with a huge base.
He's gonna.
They have a lot of flank space.
Well, no, because you have to make the infantry get there first, right?
Yeah.
Oh wait, so it's a Warjack's flank off of infantry.
Off friendly faction warrior models, which is a conundrum to have because your long threat extenders are things like halberds, and when you're running a guy like Vyros who doesn't have a widespread armor buff or an output option for those particular models, you're paying like 13 to 21 points for dudes that run into position and hope that your jacks get there and do some work.
Yeah. What you really want with this kind of guy is basically someone like a Manowar Draka. You basically want solos who are good.
Dester Thanes.
Pain Knight or something like that.
You want basically models that you don't mind running into position for flank because they're quite tough so they can survive through things like covering fire. Because that's another problem is like, covering fires, random countercharging, that sort of thing.
Yeah. To be honest, the models you traditionally use with this is infiltrators just because they've got their
speed 7, and they're cool, seven, and they're stealth, and they're cheap, and it's
all... Yeah, if they don't work, then you're screwed, but the list really has one thing where you cast mobility first turn, you run up, you're like 3/4 of the way across the board, your opponent can't move, they're like, what the hell is this? I didn't know Virus 1 was good.
That's and then they're really like, I'm going to hide behind this forest, and then you're like, I'm going to see through that forest.
Right. And that's really all he does, right? So he's
that's
up there.
A really good ability.
It is excellent.
But it's better on another caster.
That's right.
So sure, when it Virus comes, 2.
Yes.
Moving on.
It comes down to that. Virus 2. So what does Virus 2 get? Well, he gets like flank, but every day, it's called Synergy.
He does, and he's... Like, by far my favourite caster stat line in the game. It's because he's got
the best
caster stat line in the game.
That's right, yes.
16, 19?
But he's also got, like...
No, 15, 18.
15, 18.
That's still pretty good.
Right, and the
thing... I was, like, one up off of those.
And the thing that Chris was saying before about, like, ret casters being boring unless they're really good and then they do things. And Virus is sort of one of the two casters that really epitomises a caster that does cool things.
Yes.
The guy has got the coolest... gun in the world.
Well,
it's
yeah,
like,
it's I'm going to charge you and shoot you with my sword and then hit you with my sword and then be the coolest guy ever.
And then, by the way, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah. Well, so, he's on a horse.
He's on a horse.
Yes.
And
also, I have bird's eyes, so I can see through my forest.
And he's got an upkeep that says, I get to go through that forest.
And if I'm really, really cool about it, I'm going to make 2 shots instead of 1. So he does cool stuff. And I think that's why he sees a lot of play, is because A, he's really survivable. He takes any piece of terrain like no tomorrow. 15, 18, with any buff, and we're going to get to that in a sec with his spell list, will just go crazy. And you can bait out some bad assassinations.
19, 20 is pretty good.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, you got to remember about that is because he's such high speed, you can even sit in stuff like forest and not give a crap, really, because guess what? You know, when you're speed 8, you're going to get places.
And if you get really stuck, then, well, it would be really handy if you had, like, not a great, but you had a spell that gave you Pathfinder.
That's so, what I actually noticed with this guy is that he fucking loves the Pathfinder objective.
He also, the more that I played him too, he actually really loves the spell Easy Rider, despite the fact that it is a bad spell.
Yes.
So going through his spell list, I mean, the guy has got Deceleration, Easy Rider. So Deceleration is +2 arm against ranged magic. Everyone knows that one. Easy Rider is a non-upkeep spell that gives everything Pathfinder in his control area. Lock the target, which is a, like, let's face it, a joke.
Garbage nuke.
And then Synergy, which is a caster-defining spell, and Twister, which is, again, you're better off shooting your gun. So he's got like three, so two really cool spells on his list, and then one spell that will solve a problem for you when the problem arises. So that combined with the fact that Rhett has Sweet Jacks, and he really probably does like to play in a list that gives them Shield Guard, gives you a very tanky, very fast, very efficient list in output.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily have to, because he also quite loves Sirens.
He also does love Sirens. So he's one of those casters
who doesn't love Sirens?
But he's one of those cards that fits in a range of the themes very well.
So long as the themes have either Sentinels or Jacks, and usually you still need Jacks with your Sentinels.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't bring Jacks without Sentinels without a good backup. Because let's face it, you're going to take 22 of them, and 4 of them will get to make an attack.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's be honest, like, Virus 2 is one of the reasons why Virus 1 is basically gets a pass, because,
Virus 2 does the same thing, but better.
Yes. He
does.
And Virus 2, like, quite a... And more importantly, Virus 2 is actually fun. Like... Him doing random bullshit with a gun, like, actually Rhett, like a lot of game casters to close out.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why when we get to Gary, we're like, you could play Gary, but how about you play Virus too? Because you know what's better than your two little pew-pew guns is that your gun is also your sword.
I'm gonna shoot you with my sword.
Like, also, I get synergy.
I'm on a horse.
People like to play, like, the good, solid support casters, but there's always something really appealing about, like, the really dynamic, movement-based, like, actual work casters.
Yeah.
Like, and the Butcher 3s, the Sorcerers, and the Virus 2s.
And this is a caster that does also have a feat that, on paper, looks kind of okay. In execution, does a range of okay to next to nothing. And I think that's something...
Oh, it does more than okay sometimes.
With a player that is playing a list to abuse the feat in picking the right matchups... That feat, really good. It does things like stops you from losing a scenario. In fact, it basically makes the game unlosable on scenario because you put a...
You killed my guy. That guy goes in the zone.
Goes in the zone. And now you
run out of attacks. That guy goes in the zone.
You run out of attacks on this side of the table and that sort of thing, which is really cool. But then you also run into the problem where you can lose too much too fast. And any player...
Because you accidentally feed them more than they should have.
Right. And you can make the... And it is a feat that you can... have your opponent just decide, I'm not going to let you trigger. Which is also a big problem, because if you're playing, like, the mass infantry, you don't have a lot of threat range. And, like, at the end of the day, your opponent just backs off so that you're still in their threat range, and they're not in yours.
Yep.
Yeah, but so it depends on how you use it, I suppose.
One problem with Virus, and it has to be said, is that Virus does not have a threat extent. I know his feet doesn't count as one.
No,
it definitely isn't.
His feet is a bit of position jockeying.
Yeah, which is why I think Virus... Like, Virus is, for the longest time to me, and because, I mean, we played on the Australian team, and we've basically been of the opinion that Virus isn't, like, fantastic at an event like WTC, mm-hmm. because a lot of his threats are static.
Mm-hmm.
He's good to just have, because he's quite solid.
Cool guy.
He's a cool guy, and sometimes you just need a synergy brickbuster.
Yep.
But he doesn't sort of have a lot of flex, and then you get stuff like, oh, I don't know, guys with guns, sirens, sphinxes, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Then that sort of opens up a different aspect of him. I think that he'll obviously probably appreciate whatever the fuck they do with Dawnguard. It literally doesn't matter.
No. But the fact that he gives veteran leader out to Dawnguard is...
Oh, just, so good. Yeah, Matt, 8 fucking Dawnguard assholes.
Can I just quickly point out that he's in an assassination run, he's just as good as Gary.
Probably better.
Like, he's better.
Well, he gets a free boosted attack roll.
Because he's faster, right?
Yep.
Well, he gets also a free boosted attack roll.
He has an instantaneous higher threat range than Gary can muster, even with Hunter's Mark on a caster, which, let's face it, you're rolling a... Like, Lanissa 7's at a 15. Yep. So, bad times. But then... He can get himself up to Matt 11, power 17.
So
which
I feel
is
with
cool.
Virus, I don't like if you're playing with Virus, I feel that if you're playing him in Forges, you need to include some of the models, despite your first thought being just take maximum free shit. Like take your Arcanist as free souls. Incorrect. You should take some models to increase your threat range beyond the printed values. Because Griffins that can threat further than what do they threat? 11, 13? Right. If you can threat them to 15 by just saying, I have Lanissa on the table. You don't have to do anything with her. You just say, I have Lunissa on the table.
Yep.
Then your opponent has to freak out. Whereas what happens, I've seen with when I play into Virus, is I just throw the tape measure on the... I throw the like, sticks on the table and just stay out of the threat range of most of the things.
Yep.
Like, I can take a Griffin or two, whatever. Even, I'll let you even get in with Fleeted Griffins. You have to pay so much focus for that. But once you start throwing in a Magister, Magisters are really cool, incidentally, if anyone's not aware.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet.
They're fucking and annoying.
It turns out
Whiplash!
That, depending when they're free, but yeah, keep going.
Well, that's the thing. With Forges, right? Yep. Is when they're Forges and they're free, it's like, that's why I'd rather take those as free solos as opposed to, like, fucking Arcanists.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus
and
Christ.
You are playing in a theme that kind of... and a list archetype that kind of encourages you to take a Helios. And that... I think also fixed a lot of problems that Virus brought across from Mark 2 is a gigantic base that he wants to hide behind. It plays well with synergy and it displaces the world. It also helps hand out focus if you're playing badly. And at the end of the day, like, it will be the last thing that dies. And if you're closing out a game with a combination of Imperator's Helios and Virus, then you've got a pretty solid endgame brew.
Remember what we said about pushing models, which is that the pushing models you have left at the end of the game become exponentially more powerful because a lot of the models that are immune to pushes tend to, by that point, be dead.
Yeah,
because you killed them.
Because you killed pushes. Because they're immune to pushes. Yeah. And it's like, you could just say, I have, as long as, when you're playing a caster like Virus 2, who has no negative threat settings, as long as you say, I have a threat extender, it's, I pull you forward a Magister. You can just say that, and your opponent will be forced to play around it.
That's absolutely right. It's a magical thing written on the bottom of, like, Lunissa's card or Magister's card, which says, your opponent deploys
play
2 inches backwards.
And they'll always play 2 inches further away, yeah, and they should.
Right. Or, ultimately, they risk it, and then you fuck them up from time to time.
Or you roll the Lunissa Hunter's Mark, and it rolls, like, double ones, as it wants to do, much like the AR. Iron Holt kiss a little ice.
It can happen, but on the other hand, sometimes you shoot it with a, you know, you shoot it with a Sphinx, and
yeah,
it's
totally
good times. Different theme, of course.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with Legions of Dawn, I think what Virus actually does more is he runs sort of like a gun line, and if you come into him, then his sirens with synergy will absolutely obliterate whatever they get into.
Yeah.
Thinking about the flank, right? You know what's better than flank? Synergy. Because it works on everything.
Yeah.
Alright. So
we're getting to Alara.
Yes, another cast.
Dylan's favourite.
No, really,
yes,
not my favorite. I think she's a lot of fun, though. Like,
she's
definitely
cool.
A lot of fun.
She is cool.
But
she's certainly better than PLara.
That's right.
I'm not sure about that anymore, actually, because PLara got quite a lot better in MK3.
But she also doesn't go into a theme that wants her.
Yeah.
That's true. That's
she
true.
Only belongs in Shadows, which is a real sad place for
her. Oh,
you
mean like PLara, right?
Yeah, if you want to take less inventory in Shadows, then I think you'd
take a Refuge
in
Heavy, it's fine. It's cool.
Or even like two Harpies.
Yeah,
like
that
two,
Refuge
whatever.
Is cool.
Like, it's going to be good.
It's a cool effect.
Yeah, you're right. As it stands, there's just...
I would love to see PLara in Defenders. I think that would be really cool.
So, I think her main problem is that she misses Disco.
Yeah,
Discordia
so
actually
really
is...
Oh, I miss Disco. I miss that Jack.
Disco is, incidentally, Discordia, is incidentally one of the biggest, like, losses Retribution have had in general, moving to this themes nonsense we're now in, because Disco used to be everywhere and used to be like, okay, there's, you know, Mage Hunters and they need a Blast. For fuck's sake.
Pre-Theme Force, Disco almost was one of the causal factors that pushed Retribution to the top of the power curve.
That's right, because he was just so generally good, you couldn't go wrong by taking
him. Well, he had a good gun, he had a good benefit that protected your really squishy models.
He punches fine. He's got
the
smite, which is good.
Yeah.
Like on
the
punching. The
chain attack, it's good. Like, there's nothing about him that's bad. It's just that he doesn't really want to play with Ran these days, and
that's right.
The
Ran
only
already,
plays he gets blame.
That's right. Ran already protects you against most of the shenanigans.
And the bond is cool, but Disco doesn't really close out a game for you. He doesn't contribute turn by turn. It's just it's in Awkwardsville.
Often your opponent will kill Disco for you because he's such a high impact piece. So
that's
right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too with Ryan is like, if you could get Disco to spray them, they're dead anyway, right?
Yeah.
So why are you bothering with this whole spray business when they could be dead?
Yeah.
When you could just pull them a billion inches.
That's right.
When you can do, but you forget, you're already dead. This is the North Star style.
Yes.
So, back to Alara. The second, not the
She's
first.
Got cool rules, like, right across the board, right? And there's nothing about her that's bad.
Really?
Outside of, the like, the one spell that I have a
she
massive
wants,
gripe with.
She would, if she was 15-18, no worries.
If she was 15-16, I think that you're actually looking at a very different caster. And I played against this against Colin the other night, where, at the end of the day, Colin was forced to go for a, like, a shovel assassination. But all he needs to do really is connect to Alara, and she's taking significant damage off any boosted damage roll.
Yes.
And that's a big concern for your caster, who does want to be handing out buffs, who does sort of want to play the position game, because she herself can threaten small pieces, not casters, I don't think you should ever assume that she can kill a caster. But she has cool abilities. And she's speed 6. She has apparition. She's got retaliatory strike, so she can gut, like, make guys who come near her like go away a little bit. Blood Boon is a great ability.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what primary...
One of the best things on her card.
That's right. Yeah, but that's why she wants to be up there mixing up, getting that...
And she's and she's way too killable for what she does at the moment.
That's right. And she just needs too much focus to simultaneously cast the Scything Touch, teleport away,
get
the
balance shot. She gets to 1 to 0 camp very quickly. And I think that's a problem, especially with the fact that she's our one source of infantry-based turn-by-turn damage increase through Scything Touch. And Scything Touch, as it stands, is... I can't defend it. It's a bad spell that has a cool ability. Because it's an upkeep spell that only gives one model Dark Shroud. Going back to Mark II, Scything Touch, which was just a +2 damage buff for a... Scything Touch, which was a +2 damage buff for a unit, it's not as cool as it used to be. And she doesn't push like a whole board's worth of damage up. She pushes like... She makes one little section go crazy for a turn.
Yeah. Usually it's a section around, like, a single Jack, maybe Marshall, maybe not. Doesn't really matter.
Or you're sending, like, a bunch of... Like, you're sending the 4 guys into a heavy where you wish you'd been sending 5 in, and the Scything Touch pushes them just over the edge, which I guess is defense of the spell, right, and defense of her ability to push out damage. But it really... Like, when you play it on the table, it just feels like she's not... Like, that's not going far enough.
Elara's not quite on the whole... If you need a spell to carry a caster, usually the safe bet's always TK, right?
Yep.
TK, right? And then the
so she should definitely get TK.
Well, yes. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that when you compare it, it's like you don't really need much else. If they've only got TK on their card, they're probably going to be pretty good, and then it's up to their feet, right? And then that's it, right? Yep. That's your caster. But here, she can't really mix it up because of her stat line.
Yep.
So what are you taking it for? Like, she doesn't... All her spells are, like, almost there.
Yep.
In order to get her value to be good enough just to with her spells, she's going to cast so much.
She's a little bit too awkward, but she's actually very close to being quite excellent.
Yeah, that's right.
And my...
She just needs some focus efficiency, and she'll be fine.
Yeah, even if it's just minor stuff. Like, Mark for Death is a good stealth answer, but she herself does not ignore stealth. So therefore, she never really wants to cast it in its intended role.
And she doesn't really want to pay to take an Arknode over, you know, a Jack that does work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you kind of need a Jack that does work.
Yep.
You might need an Arknode because of Scything Touch, but Chimeras aren't really what she wants. Like,
nor are Phoenixes, because outside of, like, I don't know, one caster, nobody really is, like, scrambling to grab a Phoenix.
Mm. It's just not the meta for them.
No.
And just, there's a lot of better things that you could probably take.
Well, usually it's a whole, like, you don't want to run your Phoenix up because then it dies and you just lost a heavy for arcing a spell.
Yeah, yeah, which is marked for death, which you probably, like, what are you following that up with? I actually think that she is quite playable in Dawnguard, as you yourself have attested to, Tom. So I'd actually be curious to see her post Dawnguard CID.
And potentially post Alara CID. Just a couple of tweaks is all I'm saying, to make her close to a very, very
I don't think she'll be the CID caster.
She gets played way too much in other parts of the world, and to my confusion, not with Dawnguard, but... Like, really, I think that she will be able to push things like Destas. And if Invictus get fixed, like, you're going to see a crazy amount of work happening there.
I think you're right there. I think, look, to be honest, she probably just belongs with Sentinels. Because Halberds don't really have a place at the moment. Sentinels are the best melee infantry.
And giving Sentinels just a feat of +2 charge and Ghostly is real...
I mean, the new Bane Knights.
Yes.
They are now actually Bane Knights.
They got Dark Shroud, the Tower 12 Weapon Masters with Ghostly.
That's right.
And they have Vengeance.
And they got Vengeance. So, yeah, they actually become really cool guys with her. And there is a lot on her card that I do like. There's just, I don't know, there's a lot of incentive for your opponent to kill her.
I've got Wall of Steel as well. How about that?
No, that's Wall of Steel's there, the equivalent of... Yeah, actually. They're Bane Knights.
But if I can make one plea, the sole reason for coming onto this podcast is to make a plea with people who do play Alara. She's not better than Assyria. She doesn't live in a world where she could be better than Assyria. Please stop saying that she's better than Assyria.
She does the same thing
as Assyria. But she can do more work than Assyria.
Sure, but she also has to roll dice to make any of that work happen.
And she has to be up there in the front, whereas Assyria can be the last model.
Yeah, Assyria can literally sit on the...
Where a fire troll just might accidentally set on a fire and kill her.
Yes. Or players are incentivized, like I found today at the tournament. They're, like, really incentivized to try and roll, like, 8s with a single model to Shadowbinder.
Oh, I was losing that game.
Yeah. So, yeah. So she's cool. She's like a fun factory out of 10. But I'm not there in terms of her being up at the top of our...
No, she's a mid-range caster.
She's a perfect mid-range caster.
She's got a very good tool set. They're a little more awkward. They're not, like, optimal.
Yeah.
That's the problem. She's not optimized,
and she
which
doesn't
is...
sit in the boring range of some of our casters.
No, she's
which
not
is
boring.
Actually quite good. And I think that just
which
a couple
makes
of...
her better just because it
Absolutely.
Makes her more fun to play.
Absolutely.
Either she gets a couple of tweaks, or the lists that she likes to run get a couple of tweaks, when then you'd got yourself a winner. But yeah, until then, like, she's not...
Yeah, we'll see.
And please try playing, like, Jack Marshall Sirens with her. It's so
you
much
make
fun.
Me
want
to kill
yep.
someone.
Yep.
Also, you definitely...
Why? He doesn't play anymore.
You really want the Fanes with her.
Speaking of
the,
killing people...
Death of Fanes?
No, the Fane Knight and
the
Fane
Guardian. Yeah, I agree.
The Guardian's just...
If
exactly
only they went into Legions.
Exactly,
of
right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah. Anyway, so on to our favourite dude who
it's
seems to
Jeffy,
not do anything.
We're here.
Yes, if
yeah.
Jeff, we're here.
Okay, so here we are talking about Gary, who... Like, on paper, like, looks like he's meant to do some things.
No,
and
it doesn't. Not even on paper.
No, not even on paper. Not really. So, here's how, like, functionally how this caster works. So, if anybody watches Rick and Morty out there, I'd liken him to the episode that includes Crumbopulous Michael, where he, like, gets, like, real juicy. He rubs his hand together. He's like, oh, boy, here I go killing again.
I just love killing. I don't like kill anyone. I'll kill my grandmother.
Just love killing. Does, like 1,000 flips through a high-security complex, like, breaking dudes' necks as he goes.
If only Gary could get that far.
Yeah, right. But gets 6 feet away from his intended target, which, like, for lack of a better definition, is an inanimate object. Gets ready to pull the trigger, and then gets flown into by a spaceship piloted by a 12-year-old. So, yeah. So this is a caster who, like Dylan said, on paper, does absolutely nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're a caster dies to boosted power 12 guns, then you're dead. Without focus? Without focus or
sure.
Fury, yeah.
Sure.
But if your cast doesn't die to that, then Gary loses the game. So
Gary's got a gun. In his defense, Gary's actually got a lot of spells that on any other caster would make them, like, top notch. Like, Sentry is a cool spell.
Sentry on Arcantric Force Generators, like, that's quite strong.
I don't think you say going to be bonkers broken and then
man,
Sentry.
Man, I wish I
yeah,
had
Psychic. Really
I wish
works.
I had Psychic Vampire.
Hey, it makes him unique.
Mind you.
Except that it's never going to get cast and is totally pointless. Like, but Mirage is a great spell.
No, it's not.
You fuck off. Mirage is the fucking worst spell.
So I just ticked off the Grim Complainer.
Okay, so we've actually latched on the main problem with Gary, which is literally he just tells her, boy, I'm just gonna kill your caster.
Yeah.
And he just can't because it's
and
absolutely amazing.
Mind you, if Ron had Gallows, now that would be good.
Ron had Gallows and he'd get one extra inch of TK every turn.
the problem is, like, every fucking spell on his list is just like,
I'm not going to push anything particularly further than what it's going to do
it's
already.
So there's Gallows, which is cool, but until you roll the one on distance,
right,
and then you're just like, fuck.
But
you have Heightened Reflexes, which is, in every case I've ever seen, the spell is always just better on the caster than on a unit.
Absolutely.
So this just means that it's Gareth is actually steady, stationary, and Depth 19.
And Focus 5.
Mirage is just the worst. Okay, it's better on units. If you're playing units, it's better. It's still awkward in the way it costs, but on, like, on battle group, it's garbage.
It's good on Sentinels.
It's also fucking telegraphed as fuck.
But then you could play the next less worst caster in the faction,
yes,
exactly. And it gives them plus 2 speed for a feat.
I don't mind Mirage, because it's the extra 2 inches against shooting, which
and it's a play, so it
again, it's
the
better on units.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's better on units, but still telegraphed as fuck, and
I mean,
like, oh boy, here I go killing again.
No, because there's, like, Quicken, which you're like, I can upkeep this, and then I can move it over here,
I can move it
over there. But Mirage is like, I move my spell over here, and you can wait till next turn. It's like, I
just
lay my trap card.
You put it onto, and here is the problem with it, right? Like, so you put it onto a unit of Sentinels, you're like, all right, these guys are range 12 now.
Yes.
I bet you haven't seen that threat range before. I bet you're not going to kill any... Oh, they all died.
Yeah. And your opponent's like, and that last one there, I'm going to measure 12. Ah, I almost forgot 15. Yeah, you get 15.
Oh, boy.
I guess I'll just let you charge you because there's like one sentinel left. Like, yeah.
That's the mistake. And, that's when you win the game.
Right? And the problem that I have with Gary is that he doesn't actually do anything that he wants to do, like, at all. And the case in point would be the one time that I've ever seen him on the table. I've never put this dude on the table, again, for all the reasons why he's terrible. But I played a game against Jeff who was, like, convinced in a magic heavy meta that this was a slam dunk. Because you push Gary far up, he's got cool stats, he's hard to kill. Especially when he feats. I was playing Ryan, so this should have been like a windmill slam, you don't get to play the game.
Well, for people who want to, like, check out Gary's card quickly, his feat says, while you're inside his control range, you can't cast spells, channel, or spend focus and all that jazz.
Or be placed.
Or, yeah, be moved by place effects.
So, instead...
Which is cute.
Yeah.
What I did to a Gary that was on negligible camp was run a battle mage exactly 1 inch after asking Jeff what Garrett's impressive melee threat was, which was 0.5, and then did that 3 times over, and a combination of slams and charges and smites and things like that, and the dude was dead. And it's just case in point that his feat doesn't do anything, his threat isn't impressive enough to scare other casters away. Like, sure, like, weak casters will die to a couple of power 12s, but the dude's only rocking a 19-inch threat range, like 21 if you're doing it on 2 shots. And if you're trying to charge in,
plebeian. Sorcerer can do it at 24.
Sure, and then you've got
an auto station. And then followed up by a rifle.
And then you're rocking a melee stat line that doesn't even kill moderately tanky casters 50% of the time. We were working at the math for Butcher before, and he only killed Butcher 50% of the time.
Didn't we work out as less than 50?
Less than 50. Because you're relying on about a 50% every time you roll a hit.
If, like, all things, if you're just charging a butcher, like, you do kill him about maybe 50% of the time. As soon as anything else arrives, like a dog or intervening models or you having to spend focus to clear anything, then it just immediately tanks.
Yeah. And I think that is a perfectly too much amount of time that we spent talking about Gary.
I think, realistically, Gary is a cool guy, but he just, as a caster...
One of the nicest models that...
That model is...
I disagree.
I like the concept of the model. Yes. I don't like the actual application. It's a very old model
Rat. Sure,
it's not a super good model anymore. It's a cool idea that they could easily do a resculpt for. But currently, I can't agree with the statement that Gary has a cool model. Because Gary's model is kind of old and decrepit, just like him.
Okay.
Brian's the expert in that area.
All right, so maybe we should just start talking about Assyria, and the conversation will take a marginally positive turn.
Well, while you're talking about that, Assyria is even worse than Gary. The internet told me.
She
doesn't even have her own attack. I mean,
only has ancillary. It's almost like she can hit someone with a colossal fist.
Card, her aunt actually has her asleep.
Yeah, 16-30. Are you for fucking kidding me?
Speed 6.
Guys, I don't understand. My Assyria card has here range 10, power 18, AoE 5.
That's really funny because mine actually has a range 12, power 14, crit dispel, AoE 4 gun.
Oh, Jesus.
That's Harambe. Sorry,
but my one has a slightly different one. It basically has, like, I think a range 12. Where do you have it? A Banshee? Yeah, it's a kind of a Banshee gun. That seems quite a good one. Do you know that, like, that knockdown makes it really easy to hit with the follow-up attacks?
Colors
of the rainbow.
So Assyria at the start of Mark 3, I'm not gonna lie,
they haven't even talked about how easy she is to kill with her 16-13 stat line.
Minutiae of how easy she is to kill in a minute. I don't think, as Chris was about to say, I don't think anybody's going to fight you that she wasn't impressive at the start of Mark 3.
The simple fact is, Mark 3, when we started off, was a lot of the times, because it was, in the end of the day, a lower points value than MK2, which we're coming into from, what we were finding when testing was that the serious problem was that she just ran out of stuff.
And it was a jumpy game dominated by a caster like Kane 3, who didn't even have to roll attacks make her dead.
Yeah,
I was thinking Kane 2.
Other ones, examples include like Hyra Claimer. Like Hyra Claimer getting even a decent feat would mean that Assyria would lose even
a couple of signs of Portent Sprays will put her in the ground.
Even
right?
without that, if Hyra Claimer just feats and kills her army, what's she going to do counter? Like then it's just mop up time with Hyra Claimer.
And then June 2017 rolled around, and she got Shadows of the Retribution.
Yep. She got just a lot of things,
and like, she's got just a slew of amazing abilities.
Well, the thing is that Sierra's never been bad. I played a lot of her in Mark 2.
I'm in agreement.
And she just got better in Mark 3. The difference was the number of points, because obviously her force multiplier feat works a lot better with a high point value, right?
Yep.
Where you just force multiply 20% more army for 20% more. That's great.
You get more rules in your army is more efficient, and then it now is more efficient with more signs of points.
Remember the entirety of Mark 2 where we were saying that the one thing that Mage Hunters needed was to be able to ignore stealth?
That's right, yeah. Well, and guess what?
That was the end of Mark 3.
With themes, she got the extra points, and...
Mark 2.
She got a really good theme.
She got a great theme. I mean, like, you're looking at, like, looking at her spell list, she has got... Like, I can't think of many games where I don't cast
this is
every
the,
single one of those spells at least once.
This is kind of the opposite of Gary's list, where you look at Gary's list, it's all, like, C-tier spells, like Gallows and Iron Reflexes and, I guess, Sentry on a, on a cricket, I guess.
You cast them because you can't boost your gun.
Those spells are
right.
All
so
just
what do we have here? We have Admiral Blinding Light. Blinding Light is a faction, is a game-defining spell. Crusader's Call, Inviolable Resolve, and Velocity. And Velocity is actually quite important because it means you don't necessarily need an Arc Node. Not that you mind, because your Arc Node's actually quite good.
But it also lets her do cool, like she gets to do some spicy stuff. Like, Ancillary Attack being a star action means that she can't, like, Ancillary Attack and then walk away. Until she's like, until you look at her card and realize that she can actually walk up, ancillary attack,
and
then
walk 6 inches
get
away.
Out of dodge. It's really cool.
Right over the Colossal.
Right over. She's just, but she's not. She's not all that right.
Fuck
oh
off.
Wait, now we look at her feet, and then she's got a feat that grants a selective signs importance. Which, if you're playing a piece like Hyperion and you get to fish the crit dice and you roll like a 4-1-1. And then a 5, and like any other signs importance effects would make you drop one of those ones and you don't get your crit consume, and you do get to drop that 5 or that 4 and you get to crit consume. It's actually, it's nuanced, it's kind of situational, but it is a really
amazing
ability.
Well, I think they worked it out, like it was like 33% chance on feat turn.
Yeah,
like,
it's something a bit better. I think it's a bit higher than that.
Or is 33%?
It's
33
on
the...
It's
36
normally, and then I think the feat actually increases it a little bit more.
Yes,
like,
and then it's 30, and then it's
more.
And then it's still relevant even on the ancillary attack. It's like 25 or something.
Yeah.
It's
which is
on the ancillary, yeah.
Which is fucking disgusting. You're just like, look at all these guys.
Yeah, like, actually, her, like, Harambe, or Hemera.
I love that, Jack.
Yeah. Hemera has, like, Crit Dispel on his gun.
Yep.
And that Crit Dispel is actually significantly more reliable with Isiria than it first seems, because you basically get
and
fish.
It's also, like, just attesting to how strong she is. That's an effect that you can fish for the crit for, not get, and still be like, whoopsie daisies, I guess I'll just use the rest of my blessed weapons.
Hooray!
Oh,
well.
Yes. So why is she so good, Tom? Like, what else? Like, I mean, all this sounds great, but at the end of the day, she gives you, like, plus 1.5 on your army for a turn.
Yep.
And she has some reasonable spells.
She gets to play what I like to say is, like, a very selective game, where she will isolate pieces that she wants to destroy, lock out the rest, and then eventually your game playing against her will get too hard to manage. She's incredibly difficult to kill when she sits at the back of the table behind a terrain piece with a bit of camp, and then with the added bonus of some Sluts of Syrah, who just happen to be Vengeancing Shield Guards, she actually is one of those casters that will bait out people being like, ooh, I'm going to roll some dice at you, and if my dice really hard, you're going to get dice and you're going to die. And
You might. But it's more likely that they're going to fail and then you're going
to
wreck them.
There's a lot of actual hidden ways that she doesn't die as well. Like,
Arcane
Vortex. Iron Renation was my big one because
that
she
one
flies.
Too.
So the thing is, right, is that you normally can box in an admo model. You're like, I move a guy. Do you want to trigger admonition? No. Move another guy. I want to trigger admonition. Cool. I move my charging model. You're boxed in and she just flies the fuck over. You're like,
actually,
I didn't think about that.
That's been really good for me getting into combat.
Over a house.
So
yes.
You can fly over the top of those models, behind them, and then get in combat with something else.
Better want a blinding light or something like that.
Or you just like...
Often it's just you want to gain +4 death.
Yeah.
Right.
And that model's already activated,
so you just
find
two.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah. So there's a whole range of ways that she doesn't die. And the old adage is that, yes, her feat is really important, and it's probably the most important part about her, because, like Dylan was saying, you need to trade up with that feat. But that trade-up doesn't... Like, if you play her for a considerable amount of time, if you practice with her, you can kind of get to that point where things like you don't need to jockey your feet to just deliver Mage Hunter Assassins. Like, using your feet to just put enough pressure on Scenario, enough pressure on your opponent, to make them sort of back down or make suboptimal choices to, so that they can play the longer game is exactly what you want.
Yeah, so I think that often happens in games where you have choices with Blinding Light, because
yes.
now that Blinding Light affects Jax, it's very easy to play against an army and, you know, an average army is going to have at least a few ranged weapons in it, so you're effectively playing those number of points up.
Mm.
They've got a Colossal, you're playing 40 points up. That's fantastic, right? And you don't have to deal with those 40 points until way, way later in the game. So most of the game you're playing up, which you can leverage more points when you're making more attacks, you kill more things, and at the end of the game, you just have enough to finish. And that's effectively what you're trying to do every single game.
Yes.
So every single game, you need to either knock something out, have it be out of range, or blind it so that you're playing for 20 to 30 points up all the time. And then
yep.
if you can do that, or usually it's your opponent can't reach you because you're playing a bunch of ranged stuff and all they can kill is a couple of Mage Hunters and then the rest of their army dies.
But you also look at what's been like what's been considered to be a boogeyman in the meta for the consistency of like the last year. And you've got guys like Memo 3 and Ghost Fleet. And you've got all these lists that are really presenting like strong ranged threats, and ranged threats that will bypass a lot of the army's defenses. Things like shooting your own Fireflies in the back to leap into a bunch of Mage Hunters. And you don't need to lose that much strike force before the list will struggle to like start having oomph.
Yes.
Right? So you now bring a caster that has a 22-inch threat on a spell that says your two Stormstriders don't get to shoot. And from my experience, I don't really care if I lose those heavies if it means that I get to deny those two Storms. Like, if I trade one heavy for a turn of Stormstriders of not shooting, it means that I can pop my feet, kill the lights, and then Assyria herself can actually start coming up and doing blinding lights and things like that with relative safety.
Yeah, and in those situations too, often your opponent has a choice. Well, they either kill the two heavies that came up to arc,
mm-hmm.
or they kill a bunch of strike force in the middle that aren't within arcing range. They don't get to do both.
And it's what I like to call a damned if you do, damned if you don't Assyria like game. And it's why she's strong. And she will force opponents to make bad decisions. Again, you're running a list that has saturation of threat pieces.
Yes.
You've got two, like, the list that I'm playing has two heavies, two Mage Hunter Assassins, 9, Iris 1, 2 full units of Strike Force, the Slots of Sire. Like, everything in that list is awkward, pokey, and good at what it does.
And blessed.
And how.
Yes.
Like, the amount of games where I've rocked up and somebody goes, oh, I've got this because I've got, like, D-Cell. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, there's D-Cell.
That's yeah. really adorable.
That's yeah, like, I guess your caster gets to count 3 extra focus a turn because I'm, like, so to protect from an assassination run that I'm not going to go for.
Or they'll cast it anyway. Yeah. It'd be like, well, I guess it affects my Jack shooting, I think.
Sure, my yeah. 2 Jack shots.
That's right. Oh, I quit. No, sorry, guys. That's,
yeah. My bad.
So, I feel this actually does need to be addressed, though, with Assyria, is that she does operate a bit of a knife's edge, because if your opponent does dice yeah. you do have to think about catch-up mechanisms.
Absolutely.
That's why I like Slots of Sire, for instance.
Slots of Sire,
they're very safe, for one, because they usually hang out next to Assyria, so that's usually a good place to be.
Yeah.
You just need to consider those backup pieces and where they are, because if your opponent does accidentally just obliterate your strike force with Stormstriders before you
yep.
get a chance to blind them, like they set
it
up for that, that is how they go. That is what a lot of people latch onto with the series, those kind of games where they just felt they were on the back foot because they lost models early and they never could catch up. You need to prep for that, basically, because it does happen, but Assyria does have the tricks. You just got to appreciate that she herself will, quote, not carry the game, but sort of does.
Yeah.
You've just got to have pieces to carry the game with. Like, if you get into a shit fight where basically it's like Striker 2 versus Assyria, like, that's not going to end any way that Assyria likes.
But if you've got Striker 2 versus Nan in Assyria,
yeah, that's a very different story.
Right?
Where it's like, that's what you've got to set up for. You've always got to keep a couple pieces, try and keep them alive however you do it, and just appreciate, like, you got to calculate the threat vectors a lot and use your tools to shove them down between the arcane vortexes and the other bullshit you've
and
got.
Pieces like Narn and the spears and that, they just carry so much, like, scenario relativity and relevance, like, late game. Like, a piece like a Spear of Sire is if you dig her into melee and they've got no other way to deal with it, she is a Death 17.
She's a
5 box model.
That's right.
With Vengeance.
Chaosy Eliminator, basically.
Well, they're idiot proof, which is the great
yeah.
thing, right?
With reach.
which actually, I would like to say that's actually a fairly, I'd like to disclaim that whole list is not idiot proof.
No, but I wanted to say the spears were.
The spears definitely.
Because when I first started playing Narn, and I played Narn way back in Mark 2, because
yep.
I played an Assyria list where 1 unit strike force, Colossal, and a bunch of solos, and the idea was everything was always in the right spot and my opponents never get to make an attack. And if they do, the whole game they kill four Strike Force. Every game you stay out of range, shoot everything. That was the game I played.
I miss those games.
Yeah, and I used to run Narn forward a lot to get a risky shot off, and then he'd die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the kind of thing you can't do with a Siri. You can't sacrifice your good pieces for the extra shot.
Yep.
It's better just to shave a little bit less, keep things out of range, you know, make sure you don't lose any pieces, and then solidify the, I'm just going to crush you next turn with my feet kind of game.
And play off that basis that, at the end of the day, if somebody clears the zone, are you ready, do you have the pieces ready to put back in the zone and make it tougher for them to play into, right? Yeah. Like, you got to have that stickiness in mind.
She enables you to do well with the fundamentals.
Yep,
protect your caster, you know, put all your pieces in the right spot, because your caster's not going to carry the game for you. Your pieces are going to carry the game, so play your army well, and she enforces those basics. Yep. Whereas Ryan's kind of the opposite of, like, did you get the one thing right? Good job, bro.
Did you roll all the dice?
Did your opponent just make a mistake and put their caster on the table? Oh, too bad.
Do you understand the basic principles of geometry?
Yes. Right. To be honest, I think that Assyria, like, one of the reasons, sort of by accident, we've really started liking Assyria with Shadows is because Shadows just has all those pieces that just have late-game carry potential. I think that if you want to see other Assyria lists, like, say, Legion of Dawn, for instance, the Dawn Guard thing, you'd be looking at post-CID and when they start adding those kind of models in, and then you'd be looking at trying to get those in. But
and that's a lot of speculation,
kind of
right?
It's a kind of Assyria list you want, though, is you really, if you're playing Assyria, think about your mid-to-late game carry pieces.
Well, they have to be...
They have to be quite strong.
Well, you've got to be careful with that, right? Because the reason that Shadows works is because it has a lot of ranged elements, which synergize with their feet. You need to be able to get an alpha, otherwise the feet is worthless, right?
Yep.
If you're...
Don't feat for Malie. Like, for the love of God.
That's right.
Unless somebody gives you a bunch of Mage Hunter Strike Force charging jacks.
Yeah, but
and
don't
then
take 30 halberds and feat with the Malie, because you'll kill everything ever. Like, congratulations. You'll kill all four models your opponent gives you, maybe 10.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you'll have blown your feet and most of your army.
And it's good if your opponents play into that. The halberds are going to get maximum value, but against good players, it's not really going to happen. So...
Yeah.
You need the ranged elements, but if you just take halberdiers and strike forces, you're not going to go well in the late game. So it's that balance. Like I said, it's good army composition, having a nice range of utility, and she herself adds to that. So you play her well at the back, don't die.
And the last point that I'd add to Assyria, and this is something that I've really grown to appreciate, is you need to understand your matchups. And every matchup has its particular linchpins. If you are playing into things with a lot of heavies, then your solos are so important.
That's right.
If you're playing into a swath of infantry, then your strike force and your infiltrators do all of the work. Things like understanding just how important somebody like Narn is in that list, where he just goes, all he has to do is go up and kill one dude and then sprint into an awkward position. Like, understanding how each of those functions into the toughest matchups makes you better at that caster. And that's a rep thing. That's not a list build thing.
That's right.
A good example I've got is, like, playing her into trenches.
Yep.
And you've got to appreciate that the primary game plan is basically for your Mage Hunter session to just do run at high-fiving all the trenches so that your Strike Force can wipe them out. And then the Mage Hunter Assassin might just end up in a weirdish spot. You don't really care. You kind of want her to be awkward to dig
out. But you look at the way the trade equity works in that game, and I will trade 8 points, which is really 4 points, because I only paid for one of those Mage Hunter Assassins to wipe out one whole unit of trenches and the dog. And like, I will make that trade.
Remember, too, it's... In that matchup in particular, the assassins aren't worth that much because they almost never get into range.
They might go on one punch man like a grenadier. And it's really cool when it happens, but at the end of the day, they are going to enable you to make that trade, like that trade up, almost impossible for the Signar player.
And in reverse, against something like Scorn, you save them for Tibbers and you don't let them even have a chance of killing them until they get two charges of Tibbers. Yeah. That's the only way you're going to kill Tibbers.
In the Legion matchup, like you quite potentially like just drop Heavy's health so low on feet turn that your opponent has to play ridiculously cagey for the rest of the game.
This is going
to
be a Mark II example. I feel it's still relevant because it's still quite applicable. No, actually, it's Butcher 3 versus Assyria. And the whole game plan was myself versus Dylan. What happened is I'd have to kill the Hyperion with Butcher 3 due to a variety of factors, mostly Mage Hunters killing whatever can kill Hyperion that wasn't Butcher 3. And Dylan would save a lot of pieces, but primarily his two Mage Hunters, with the express purpose of after Butcher goes in, the Mage Hunters kill Butcher.
Yep.
Or at least, and so my whole thing is basically like, oh fuck, I've got to make sure this sort of doesn't happen, or when Butcher does go in and kill the Hyperion, he's about as safe as he can be, maybe?
Hmm.
But if Dylan throws away one of those Mage Hunters, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, because one Mage Hunter isn't good odds, but two Mage Hunters is good odds.
Yeah, it's quite good odds. And you've just gotta be cognizant of those things. Yeah. Anyway, Assyria is actually a more complicated caster for someone who just is press feet go, blind models, win game.
If you're getting into the faction, I would not recommend starting with Assyria.
No, I would often start with someone like Kaelissa.
Or Alara.
Speaking of Kaelissa.
That's right.
Yes, Kaelissa. So, Dylan, you took Kaelissa to the WTC.
Yes, I did. And that's mainly because I didn't know what I was doing. But it did well enough. So, Kaelissa has a ridiculous number of
rules.
Great rules, right? In particular, her personal rules. Mm-hmm. So, with her gun being able to do one of, well, three things, but really you won't do all of them. There's Dispel, which is great. There's Mechanical Seizure, which you'll use a lot, turns a Warjack stationary. And there's Energy Siphon, which you won't really use that much. It used to be the greatest thing on the gun, but not anymore, which will essentially steal a Focus or Fury.
Yeah.
So she does a lot of things. What she doesn't do is buff your guys. So she doesn't give you anything to hit or damage at any time, really. She doesn't help them at all. But she does give you a couple of ways to survive with Banishing Ward and Blur, and her feat, which is really good. Nothing can be charged, everything gains stealth.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a very defensive caster, and she has a lot of utility in her, like, just her personal capability.
Yeah. Kaelissa, I feel, is probably one of the biggest victims of Theme Force nonsense, because one of the things I found playing heavies originally at the start of the game was Kaelissa was a fucking nightmare, because if you had, like, 5 to 6 heavies, three of them would get shut down by Kaelissa.
Well, was
fourth one, and one of them would probably get shut down as well by Iris.
So it was the combination of, like, Kaelissa, Iris, and the Electromancers. And you could shut down a whole heavy game, which is what you saw a lot of at the start of Mark III.
So one That's heavy right. would die to Kaelissa's army, and then two would get crowd-controlled out by Kaelissa. Yep. Quite common. Now that you play Karchev with, like, a million heavies, that doesn't really happen, and similar such lists.
Well, it's also the themes have changed the way your lists are built.
And there's a lot of random rules as well that sort of come in. It's just like, I shoot the model, so it's got Shield Guard randomly. Like, for fuck's sake.
And I think one of the things that, like, I mean, Dylan and I both played a lot of Kaelissa at the start of Mark III, and for me coming into it, like, I took one look at her card coming off the back of Mark II, having my butthole touched so badly by Veil 2, and I saw a caster that had, like, Dispel, like, a cool gun that didn't need line of sight all the time. What do you call it?
Refuge.
Refuge is, like a very seductive spell to build a list around. And so we started out Mark III, and people sort of, again, they all had that hurt butthole feel of, like, this is almost like playing into Veil again. Except that it's not. It's not as good. But, like, the feat was, like, very strong for an exploratory play space. That feat is very difficult to play into. Mm. In an exploratory play space, refuging Disco and Banshees and Kaelissa are kind of questions that are a bit of a pain to answer. And so there was a whole combination of things that I think made her super relevant at the start of the edition that don't really have as much relevance now.
Especially with the increase of points, casters that are personally powerful lose a little bit of value because obviously they can't overshadow the game as much when there's more army points on the board.
Yeah, I feel that Kaelissa also is the victim of not really having a theme she likes.
No.
Like,
yeah, she really likes Disco, and Disco isn't her jack, so
yeah, exactly. And she kind of likes, I guess, like, it's a lot of the things is like, I guess she likes AFGs and giving them stealth and unchargeable, but no, really, she just likes them giving them stealth.
So she gives them stealth, and then we run into the problem that I have with AFGs, they're not boostable.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really in the faction, outside of, like, an Assyria feat, a Raven feat, which is one turn. They're not boostable.
And then you're like, I guess she can, like, dispel the spells on them, but you're like, you could actually probably play Thyron for that role if you really want it, and you get Blessed, which is better, because a lot of, like, the buffs, like D-Cell, don't get cancelled by Dispel from Kaelissa.
Right, and then you got a caster who's like, don't come near me, man.
I'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
And, then, like, she feels like she's lacking sort of a place, which is a bit sad for her, but and then again, I fucking got terrorized by
Kaelissa. She was a great Pathfinder, but now that the world's been kind of sorted out, she's kind of lost.
Mm. Yeah.
That's right. Well, I mean, she's always been a little bit at odds at what Retribution wants to do, which is Alpha Strike. And she doesn't really help with the Alpha Strike, except her feet kind of stops them shooting you. But at the end of the day, a lot of your stuff often has stealth. Like, just look at Shadows, right? The main reason you can't run into Shadows is because
it's redundant.
It's all stealth anyway. Yeah. Right?
And then you give them blur, and those stealth infantry are just high-def stealth infantry.
So blurred sentinels were really fucking annoying, but in the grand scheme of things, is it really that annoying?
Blurred sentinels next to Disco were really annoying.
They were, and I mean, it's good with sentinels, that's for sure, but not all of Rhett plays in that style. In fact, very little does. Like, if she could stop a heavy dying after it charged an enemy heavy with her feet, that would be great, right?
Yep.
But like something like Rask can do that just.
Yes.
But even your opponent can play around that. But with Assyria, not a chance, right? They're just going to walk
Kalissa.
Kalissa, Got Assyria on the brain. Yeah.
I think the main problem with Kalissa also is that a lot of the people she preyed on, like Wormwood and co, just don't really exist anymore.
That's right. Yeah. Even then, she wasn't like that great.
She sort of gave you a chip and a chance into Wormwood. That's and to be fair, like one of the things we found when we were testing her for the WTC, which we ended up taking out, was that she was just great in the Rhett mirror back in those days.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
She was fantastic for that because like she just dominated it because a lot of the Rhett lists just didn't have enough Warjacks to deal with that.
Yeah.
And she herself could just say, like, if there was a Ron on the table, for instance, she's just like, no, fuck off.
Well, and she also, like, lives in that world of, like, sure, she has almost, like, an almost attractive assassination run. And Rhett casters kind of have that set line that she can hunt after, which is relatively high death, relatively low arm. Like, we're boosted guns. Sure. Like, her with a bit of help from a couple of, like, Hydras or something might put a Rhett caster
in
the ground.
She turns Hydras on pretty good.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Assyria is the Rhett mirror that you want, right? Yeah. So she's the one you want.
Yeah.
I'd actually be curious to see her post a couple of, like, just themes and stuff.
I think we'll see what happens after Dawnguard. Dawnguard might have some tools for her.
Yeah. Blood Sentinels were a fucking atrocious nightmare. Those things were the worst.
And they're still
speaking
fine.
Of atrocious nightmares.
Is that Bullshade?
No, we're looking at what used to be Ossian.
Oh, God, Ossian is before that. Fuck, I forgot to write Ossian here. Oh, wow. It's almost like that was deliberate, because Ossian is such a...
Forgotten.
Wait, he's fine, right?
Ossian is a victim of...
being too good, getting nerfed.
He is a bit of an
He's
bloomer.
Got a mad dog problem.
Sorry?
He had a mad dog problem.
It's funny how it was, because all he really lost was Deadeye replaced by Fortune, but the fact is that it kind of...
Fucking Deadeye, no.
Deadeye was the best, though. That's the thing. Deadeye and Rhett was so bonkers.
The best.
So the main problem was, it kind of fucked with him as a caster, because the whole thing was that one of the great draws of Ossian was that back in those days, when Ossian was king, is that he had access to RFP with Deadeye. And now is you got RFP or Deadeye, and let's be honest, Rat 6 Shatterstorm is not impressing almost anyone.
He's also the cast that rocked the ability to make you dead with Mage Hunter as Strikeforce.
Yes.
Right, and that was the cool thing that everybody missed about Mark 2. And take away Deadeye, and he doesn't do that. And take away Deadeye, and your Mage Hunters aren't hitting a Warjack that's in like any form of defensive territory.
He was get all of Signar's, but because you know you play against Signar and they're just like, oh, what's your arm? And you're like, but you haven't hit yet. Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm Rat 18. Yes. And you're, all right.
Yeah,
sure.
That's
what he was.
That's like playing against Arian all the time. It's like what's your it doesn't matter.
What's your doesn't matter.
And it was like having like two full units of 10-man gun mages that were even cooler than gun mages.
That's right. So
no, and I have no problem. I kind of wish Ossian was better. Like, Fortune was not the
Fortune
right spell.
Was the wrong way to
but
go.
Deadeye was fucking trash.
Yes,
like,
was...
It was fine. It was fine. It should come back.
Deadeye did nothing wrong. Just like Jace. Just like Jace.
Would Rhett have really lost, like, only won 22% of their games at
Shut
the
ATC? Shut up,
Actually, it was a thing when I went over to America. I was just like, right, everyone everywhere is playing Ossian. And to be honest, the main thing with Ossian to me is that he just, like, makes numbers better. Cool. Which is good, but not, like, it's all he really had.
And when he was...
He's risky, too.
Yeah.
And when he was relevant, the thing that you played him for was the fact that High Reclaimer was a dude, and he was played a lot in the meta.
No, you
played
him for Deadeye.
No, you played him for Deadeye and a feat that made Deadeye stupid.
But when you had a caster like High Reclaimer
playing
in the meta...
You played him because he had a spell that made him better than another caster in the faction because he could do it only once a game.
Oh, I can't wait to get to that one. But, like, seriously, if somebody rocked out, like, the top lists in the meta, he flat out just said, like, everybody Wang Chung tonight.
Like, yeah, like, he's going Mad Dog spam, Hyroclaimer, and a whole bunch of other random shit he just turfed on, nobody's business.
And if that, if he'd still existed, I mean, we wouldn't have had the 12 Ghost months spam. Of Ghost Fleet.
No, because we would all be playing against Arceus.
Yes, we would. And that's the world that I want to live in.
Oh, fuck you.
Shut your warm mouth.
To be fair, Fortune has a lot of models where it's not fantastic on Mage Hunters, for instance. Yeah. But Fortune, I found, is actually quite excellent on models and multiple attacks. And one of the models that is Destas.
Yep.
Now, obviously, Destas right now, as I said, is a bit of a needs work out of 10. But you'd be looking at models like that, like, honestly, Invictus, if they ever get good again, would have a similar thing, because I think they got Assault.
They do. Yeah,
they don't have problems hitting, though. It's the other thing.
Yeah, but that's why you give them Fortune.
That second
they
part.
Don't have problems.
Oh.
No. Yeah. Ossian
they got mini feet snipe, they got CRA. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, Ossian fixes the other problem of damage, but again, you are right that he's kind of risky to throw up in there. Like, his feet will save him from time to time, but it also gets fucked by a lot of things.
Well, his feet also just kind of dares your opponents a bit. Like, it dares you and it dares your opponent. Like, I come into your threat ranges. Like, by walking into 14 of a wide range of things that I want to kill, I'm naturally going to be in something's threat range. I do cool work, and then you have a whole turn of trying to figure out if I can die or not. Yep. And then
does have Admo.
Yeah, he's got Quicken, he's got some cool stuff. He used to have Disco, and that was really cool too.
Yeah.
And
that was really good.
And now he doesn't have, but like, Admonition is, like, I mean, great on a cast like Assyria. A cast like this that actually wants to put himself up in the, like, fray and dare your opponent to come get him is asking for, like, a ranged knockdown or anything like that. And it just isn't as relevant.
Although you have answers to ranged knockdown in faction.
That's true, we do. But
you
have
the list healer. I mean, she's a weird little girl, but she does answer that problem.
Which model?
List healer.
Which model?
Yeah, shut up. I have no fucking patience for that shit, because I had to listen to people talk about, like, when I was playing Sorcerer, where they were like, oh, I can't stop dying to Sorcerer. I'm like, you have fucking safeguarded faction, play it. And they're like, no, it's garbage. I'm like, no. If you have a problem in the meta and you have a fucking answer, play it.
Which ret players were you talking to?
That wasn't
at this table.
No, it wasn't ret. I'm talking about in general. If you have something in faction that solves your problem.
Tech piece and tech for the thing that you're playing against, right? Sure.
So if you have a problem with Ossian, play the thing that gives you a way to play around it.
Yeah. Which I don't know if Sorcerer was Ossian's problem to handle, though.
No, that's not my point.
Okay.
You're saying knockdown, list healer stops knockdown.
Sure.
I was playing against people who had problems not dying to Sorcerer.
Okay.
And they had answers to not dying to Sorcerer. Yeah,
cool.
And
to one answer to ranged knockdown that doesn't require you to take a questionable model like Lysia, because there are limits to that. It's
and if
like,
you're playing...
No, there are limits and people will target
it.
But
it's just like, even the grabbing the Fae Knight and the Fae Guardian...
That was what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, it's like the Fae Guardian, for instance, is immune to Sorcerer's bullshit, I believe. It's either knockdown stationary or just stationary.
It's
knockdown. Fair enough.
He has the rule that says if he's stationary or knockdown, his rules don't work.
That's right.
Okay, but he is immune to knockdown, which is good for being able to tank a ranged knockdown and also make him better.
He's a slightly better guard
dog. In conclusion, take the Fanes, the Knight, and the Guardian, and leave your list heal at home.
But I think when this guy gets his, like, via theme, if that ever exists, I think that he
one day.
He's
fairly cool.
We have no idea
he's still
going to
be mediocre, and... Like, I really would like to see, like, I think, like, an upkeep that boosted attack rolls or something like that. Yeah. So you couldn't spam it. Probably still too strong, but, you know, we'll never know.
I mean, let's be honest.
I don't know if it needs to be just plus two or whatever.
I mean, the easy way to fix him is obviously give him Hand of Fate, which will make him bonkers again.
Definitely give him Hand of Fate. Okay, everybody at this table just said, give Ossian Hand of Fate.
I do not say that.
But
Chris, you are really good at getting things
I own ret models. Ossian was the model that got me into ret. I'm quite aware I want him to be good. But
and he's got a Mega Man cannon, like that's cool.
Yes,
right. and he's got a Mega Man cannon. He's got time powers.
Well, time powers. They should just change his feet. They should just say take another turn. That should just be the feet.
No, this isn't fucking Mark II.
Yep. He should definitely be the. Magic
I mean,
card
they did.
Time
they
wall.
Did get. Right. They did get Chronomancer off his card,
and it's a passive now. And Future Sight as a Field Marshal is spectacular.
Way better.
But he's not rocking it in. Like, he's not rocking any themes that bring Jex that he
no,
particularly
not
yeah. wants to play. But you throw, like, I don't know, say a Vaya theme where you're incentivized to take Vaya things and you're playing things like
I agree.
Vaya lights and they're super cool all of a sudden.
I think
he's
like,
one of the few that I can actually use feature sight.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Dawnguard, like, depending what they do with the Dawnguard theme, he might be just fine there. Like, because they do have guns, surprisingly. We all talk about Sentinels, but they do have a gun unit which could easily get tweaked down in points, which is the biggest problem.
And it turns out when you feat with Ossian and charge with Destas, especially quickened Destas,
yeah, that's pretty
it
gross.
Effectively is like you double charge.
Yep.
And Fortune works on both of them. I think realistically, the fact that Ossian lost so much just by having Deadeye swap for Fortune shows what kind of cast he is. He's like, he's the numbers guy. He adjusts numbers up,
yep.
and he makes sure your opponents die.
And Hand of Fate would fix all of that.
Shut up.
But that's the problem, right, is that like if he lost Fortune for an even worse spell, he'd be even worse. If he had Fortune changed for something like Guided Fire, he'd be completely different in another direction, and still bonkers.
Yeah.
It's a careful balance, and they need to tweak it, I think, a little, because right now he's not seeing play.
And speaking of
another caster not seeing play.
Oh,
for different reasons.
Dylan's favorite.
Gorshade 4, the Forgiven.
Favorite joke caster. It's his Gary.
I actually don't know why Gorshade 4, who basically is... Brian might edit it if I follow up with this. But why is he Forgiven? He did a lot of bad things.
Because
he was not a good dog.
You mean he's an elf Nazi? Is that what you want to say?
He is basically elf Hitler.
I can explain all of this because both a wizard and a god did it.
Yee!
All Forgiven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, this is like the third time I've ever looked at this guy's card, and Dylan's going to explain to me why he played him and how he worked.
Okay, well, you see here on the card, if you scroll to the second card, it says Arcane Vortex, right?
That's cool.
And that's why I played the model.
Sure.
So he doesn't actually have anything.
He doesn't really have a spell this way. Right?
So the other spells I cast is Mage Sight.
Yep.
And I also cast Hex Blast, not because of any of the text underneath there, but you see that number 13 there?
Power 13's real cool.
Yeah, Power 13. Yep. I didn't really like the other value on the left there, which said cost 3, but I cast it anyway because I need to do
one,
some damage, right?
Yeah, so one cast of that blows half your stack.
Yeah, I can only cast one, otherwise I'd die. A couple of turns I would cast 2 when I was really safe. But
spicy.
I mean,
well, you cast it and they'd be unboosted in camp 1.
But Dylan, doesn't Backlash win you games?
No, it really doesn't.
Doesn't Frostfield win you games?
No, well, his feat actually... So, a funny story, I played against Chris in one of the finals... I think it was a final anyway.
I think it was WinterCon final?
It was WinterCon final. I watched it and was confused the whole time.
And funnily enough, it was the only time his feat could ever have any value because I played into Sorsha, and you know what Gorshade's feat gives you?
It's immunity cold.
I was so annoyed because I also missed attacks due to the concealment. I'm like, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
And if anything says, like, I teched for a top table game, it's taking Gorshade 4 against Sorsha 1.
Something to note is that it does not really counter because it just delays the feat by turn.
Yeah, the next turn.
Good.
The one thing that I do really like on his card is the fact that he's a caster with Ghostwalk.
Yes.
And I think that is probably one of the spells that I would like to see more in this faction.
Gosh, it's sort of the epitome to me of basically like this whole like Ghostwalk. Really good model
yeah,
and
really,
really kind of boring casters. Like, he epitomizes boredom to an unbelievable degree. Like, he does almost nothing.
I mean, have you seen his model? He's very boring.
He's the only model ever sculpted with, like, a monobrow.
Boring.
Yeah. Monobrows aren't boring.
People with monobrows are.
And in conclusion...
No, that's just a slight against people with monobrows.
Yeah. There's a conclusion.
Yeah, in the conclusion to this very short review of Borshade, I played him because I was playing 2 AFGs, and I basically wanted to have them also be immune to TK, and that was the only way to do it. I will play Assyria, but unfortunately Assyria's in Shadows, so that list would have been better with Assyria, but I couldn't play her.
Seems legit.
He basically is off the back of that Field Marshal, and he pays a shit ton for it. I mean, he's denied his favorite theme. He's honestly one of those also looking for a Vaya theme. Like, if you give him a Vaya theme with Jax, and then he just suddenly goes and rockets off in his own thing. Because, end of the day, he doesn't really want to play infantry. Infantry don't work with his feet. Infantry don't work with his rather limited spell list.
Mage Sight would be sweet if he could run an efficient, like, gun line.
Yeah. He just can't afford it, though.
But he doesn't. No, he can't. Because he can't cast that in multiple places, because he can't do that, and then fuel up a bunch of range jacks, right?
That's right.
Which is why Hydras are cool guys, and again, they won't be taken in a...
That's right. And remember, the big thing is you have to, in order to use this Field Marshal, have focus lying around on your jacks. So you need to be running Hydras, and you need to fuel them up still, so you need to have a lot of spare focus all the time.
Yep. But he's fairly tanky. He, I guess, like, right, 15, 16 with 17 boxes.
I think the main problem with Gorshade as well is that compared to Gorshade 2 and 3, Gorshade 3 especially was one of my favorite classes in MK2.
Oh, I love that dude.
Yeah, and then you compare it to Gorshade 4, you're like, you just got old and boring, and you're now just living in a retirement home.
Why don't you get off the horse? Why'd you get
off
the horse?
I'm pretty sure that if you asked Syra really hard, she would have made your horse living again, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you already got forgiven for basically a whole bunch of genocide and other unspeakable crimes. Like, I mean, it's elf genocide.
Starting a war. Yep. Killing babies.
Stomping a baby's head.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, to be honest, babies. We could probably skip the Thyrn review and just do it right now because it's basically the same as
Thyrn review.
I would actually like to fight that.
Okay, we're going on to Helena.
Yes, there's a very slight difference. Instead of having Arcane
Vortex,
we're
doing Thyrn.
Yeah,
he's,
we're doing Thyrn.
It's a little bit tankier.
He actually has like real rules.
He has real rules that actually have
And a real feat.
Right. But there is no list that builds around him that I
like.
That's
right.
So he's got, like, Blade Shield. So the dude's tanky as hell, right? Like 17, 16 against range. You give him, like, the Storm Rager spell, and he gets, like, cool stat lines. He's like, whatever. He's, like, got a Weapon Master attack that if you attack with, you're going to lose. He's got Cleave. He gives his Jax Cleave. He's got Repose. Like, whatever. It's cool. He's got, like, some cool spells. He's got, like, a bunch of, like, he's got a feat that gives sidestep and, like, makes everything more like Khan, except it's not. And then you, like, start adding models to him. You're like, none of this does what it should be doing.
That's right.
As well as it should be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, it's all subpar, basically.
One of the main, like, what does actually Thyrn get played for? It's just like, he gets Arcane, what is he? He gets, like, the fucking crickets, and he puts Spell Pierce on them, like...
No, it's when you want to put your Fame Knight on parade and give it Storm Rager. Like, he's like, my Fame Knight is the prettiest Fame Knight.
But one of the problems there is, unlike MK2 Thyrn, the Pain Knight now does not have multiple attacks.
No, it doesn't.
And that's one of the things, like, Thyrn's list from MK2 was actually kind of a cool, like, sort of hobby type of solo spam list. And you had all the just cool solos, and you put Storm Rage on them, not interesting things. And you had Banshees, which could sidestep and not take free strikes, which was very important.
Yep.
And if you got to opponent's Warcasters, you could boost the attack roll with Thyrn's feet. That's a 4-dice crit. If you got the crit, opponent caster couldn't transfer. They're a Hordes caster, and they probably died.
Yep.
And all of that kind of doesn't work anymore. Themes sort of stop you splashing all the cool solos, and the main problem I have with Thyrn is that he's a melee dedicated guy with no threat buff.
Well, he's got one sail, but it's not that
no
good.
Threat buff. Like, this is, I mean, and
it
then,
doesn't improve his own threat. Yes, he's a face beater that doesn't threat face
and
beating.
It's also his feat is basically works better with infantry and cool solos, and he doesn't get those.
And outside of like taking, I don't know, a couple units of infiltrators, there's no real infantry in the faction that want the sidestep aspect of his feat. Like,
even the boosted attack rolls, like a lot of infantry just will
fuck pretty,
up stuff already.
They're pretty self-sufficient, and like I know that a lot of people are kind of a bit hard over his swordsman dude, and yeah, like, they got cleave, they got sidestep. Like,
look, if
like,
the Texas Raiders ever come in a big way, then the...
Yeah, shall we start playing this guy? Well, at least we start talking about this guy, and then we probably go back to playing Assyria, because she's a better caster.
Yeah, so, exactly, because blind will work, and blind works on guns, and his...
Blind and signs of importance, right?
I mean, that's part of the reason why he just feels like it doesn't work, because he doesn't really help the guns, and guns are the backbone of Retribution. They're faction-defining.
Yeah.
That's
and
what
we
know. And he's a lot better Warjack caster than he first appears.
Absolutely.
Like, he's playing Field Marshal's serious business.
And he might want some playtests in the Forge's theme force. And I haven't really given it much thought. I don't know if there's many Jacks in that theme that want the cleave aspect of his Field Marshal, or if they want the sidestep.
Griffins and more Griffins.
Yeah, sort of. But Griffins get, like, they get one good melee attack, and they get one dopey melee attack, and then it's just like, yeah.
I guess you kill a guy in the charge, and then you backswing and kill another dude, man, maybe?
But the problem that we're looking at here is a cast that, like we're talking about before, the casters that make this faction interesting are the ones that can do work, and not really put themselves in a compromised position to do that. And whether it be Assyria was shut down, whether it be Virus 2 with just being the coolest guy in the world, whether that be Ran, where we're just going to spend an hour talking about him. Like,
do not have an hour.
This guy will charge himself exactly 11 inches and probably not achieve what he was like going out
he
to.
He might sidestep in your opponent's Warcaster if
sure,
you hit
and
the attack roll.
Mistakes get made and then you're rolling a mat 7 dude with boosted, like, sure, it happens. And
Matt 9, he's probably got Storm Rager. Oh, that's another thing too, is Storm Rager going up to 3 focus, and that's just not
economical for a focus 6 caster. And I think that's about enough time on Thyrn.
Let's talk about
Helena
instead.
Helena, she's cool.
Rhythm of War is an awesome spell. Yeah.
So is...
This spell is insanely tilting, by the way. If you don't... Like, Helena's one of those casters where if you don't have an answer to her particular shtick, you literally don't get to play the game, because they get to dance out of the way and they just start doing the clown thing. Nah, 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 nah. And most of the models you try and put into a threat range get Hand of Destruction and then summarily deleted, for
and
lack
she's
of better
got,
word.
She's got a redirection gun, and which is really cool, and I think that there's an aspect to her list which she actually fits fairly well in a pair on the basis of you build a list around her, and the example that I would bring up is one that I built for Champions at CanCon, which had like an AFG, like a few Harpies, a few Hydras, and like Call It A Day in Defenders. And you sort of just had that list sitting there, which is like, do you want to play into a dedicated gun line that's going to be pretty okay on scenario and still be able to beat you in the face?
Mm.
And people choose the option that counters that, and then you just don't play her.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think she's a brick with guns.
Yeah.
She actually, like, in a lot of ways, she probably is actually better than Vyros for the simple fact that she...
Let's not get crazy, Chris.
She offers something different, because Vyros is very melee-focused, where she's quite range-focused. Mm. And
but she's not... shit in melee either.
And no, she isn't.
She's the same, actually.
She's actually exactly the same. And I think that she's the most compelling for a Jack-based gun line in the faction at the moment.
Oh, agreed. Easily.
Yeah. She definitely answers a lot of meta stuff because her Jacks just have such a hard time dying. Like, between deceleration, the feet, and generally speaking, Forges of War, which is where you see her a lot of the time. Even without that, even if her Jacks in general are just abnormally tanky,
yep.
A lot of times they'll take damage... And then they'll just get most of the shields repaired, and in addition, like, she herself can fix stuff, which she often does randomly if she's not just...
Yeah, well, you're behind,
D3
like,
plus
8
3
jacks.
Is pretty good.
You're behind 8 jacks.
Yeah.
Rhythm of War is one of the...
Great spell.
It's basically...
It's an amazing spell.
Yeah, it's the spell that makes me go, I want to play Rat.
It's a very unique spell, because most...
I like that spell.
...reposition effects only work at the end of your activation. This one, like, old school tactical supremacy works at the end of your turn.
Yeah.
And that means you can... commit, do stuff like, you can commit phoenixes, arc Hand of Destruction, and then not immediately lose the phoenixes 10 inches away from where you're...
Now it's 13, which is a lot safer.
It's a repo effect that basically just goes like, I'm going to do some stuff, and I'm just going to see how this plays out. Yeah. And at the end of the turn, I'm going to make some decisions, and I'm going to make the ones that get me least dead.
It reminds me of Hoof It. It's not quite Hoof It, but it's every turn on all my wild
events. Better than all your best models.
No, because Hoof It used to be on Feet Turn, and Feet Turn Hoof It was better than any foot... 3-inch reposition at the end of a turn.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. But we don't live in a world where Grizzle 1's relevant.
No.
No.
Because, oh man, did they fuck her up.
Yeah.
Back to the good version of New Hoof It.
So, that's the thing. It's
the
just
3
like...
inches gets over a lot of those hurdles, which is like the 10-inch guns become 13-inch guns, which is great. And stuff like the Phoenix combusting and moving away is now actually going to probably survive some charges.
Mm-hmm.
If half the unit's dead, and then... a couple of miles out of range, Phoenix might survive.
And the random aspect of her feet being failsafe is really cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and that's just like an add-on.
Also,
like,
her
rule.
Gun is just... Or in melee Everything weapon
is
just,
is cool.
It's just neatly like just, oh, that model's 3 inches away in that direction or that direction.
Yeah.
Like, which could just be completely fucking tilting for some person.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. In order to play into Helena, you need to have the ability to crack her, but you also need to be able to get into a threat range, and that's not easy.
Yeah.
And I feel that she is, she's quite a strong caster, and definitely for a battle box caster, she has a lot of depth.
Yep.
Totally. She also will randomly kill you with an obliteration. Yeah.
Or
force
strike.
Just sit down.
She'll just sit down. Yeah.
But she's very easy to play, so it's very great.
Very forgiving.
She's a very
Start here, basically.
Yeah.
If you want to play Retribution, start Helena.
But she's one of the
best
battle box casters.
And Helena at the same time is my only thoughts.
It depends on what you're going for and what, like...
It depends how you build them.
And this is where... And this is, again, one of my big gripes is that, we see a lot of complaints about the meta, and, we are sort of privileged that we don't have that sort of concept in our world where we play very varied meta. And so we're not looking to solve particular things, so... You can play it to solve, the 6 lists that are around you at any given time.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's look at Raven.
Okay, let's not.
So she used to be a caster, and now she's not. And that's about all we need to say about
her. It's not even her fault. It's they've literally just changed the models she can take and how they work.
Yeah.
Because it's like, Mage Hunters aren't Mage Hunters anymore.
You don't kill casters with Strike Force anymore. It just doesn't happen as much.
Yeah. I think that's, like, the main problem is you play her and then you just, it feels like something is missing. It feels like she's been gutted.
Well, she's
like
got
damage and
ranged feet and one ranged spell. Everything else about her says, I want to go punch stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or my, I want to make my stuff go punch
what,
stuff.
If they had given her the same kind of, like, the same kind of treatment Ossian got, where it was, Ossian was a damage caster who got a hit buff. If she had been a hit caster that got a damage buff, maybe she would be playable.
Honestly, like, ironically, I was. It might be,
she is a cool solo.
It might
character.
Be I've just been looking at Helena with her Vortet Hand of Destruction, which obviously is one of her big draw cards. It's basically Signs of Points. But if she had some kind of effect like that, where it's like, it would be more than just like Hand of Fate, lol. Just some kind of way.
No, let's go with the Hand of Fate route here.
Shut up with Hand of Fate, Chris.
But no, like just some kind of like a debuff she could put on models.
No,
so
I agree.
Yeah, like that's really
she's
what.
She's rank of six. She can't really support a debuff. Mm. But to be honest, what she should have gotten is Deadeye.
Yeah,
it already fits in with her feet, but it doesn't matter because if she was the caster, made all the range attacks hit, she would have a place in the faction, right? And she doesn't see through stealth, which is a big deal, right?
Still leaves Asiri with her place.
That's right. And she'd be the guy who you go to, boom, everyone gets Deadeye for a turn, or, you know, just cast Deadeye.
Do you
want to
kill all the trenches? All the trenches are dead.
Feet's a pretty good combo, because you're rolling four dice to hit, which makes you
that's
super effective.
Or you run it with a jackline, and you play things like, I don't know.
We shoot them in the face with like four Hydras or five Hydras.
It's fine.
Or
and
a bunch of Harpies.
And
right?
She does have Veil of Mist as well, which is a great spell. And
Deadeye might be too much.
It really just
Deadeye
doesn't.
Might
it
be too much.
We're not trying to. We aren't trying to fix Raven, but she does need something more than just like I give things snipe and boosted attack rolls.
Well, it used to be fine. The problem is the models that made that
the game changed
fine.
Around her.
Yeah.
The game literally
in quotation marks.
The game literally changed around her, and she
didn't change. She didn't change
she
at all.
She doesn't suit anything that the game's offering now.
That's right.
Yeah.
She wants to shoot in betrayers, there's none there.
No.
I mean, she's
turns
very
out being able to hit stuff is a lot less valuable in the new game.
Yeah.
Like, everybody can do it.
Yeah, it's because, like, you're playing against Death 10 Cattle Jacks, right? So, who cares?
Yeah.
No, it's not even that. Like, everybody can hit stuff. It just seems that way.
Well,
like,
the main thing is
being able to crack armor is a lot more valuable right now in the game than being able to hit high defense because it seems to be a lot easier to
most
do.
Most of the high defense stuff got toned down. In addition, there's just a lot more focus. There's a lot more focus flying around, and that means that there's a lot more just boosted attack rolls into random dude mans, even if you just like don't have a cast to fix that.
And Tom's just saying that because he really wants. He's just looking at Ron and going,
that's
"Let's
right.
move
All right,
on.
Look,
Let's
fuck
move
it.
On.
All right, fuck it. We've talked enough about it, guys. Tell us about Dickhead McDickhead.
Well, that's not all the time we have for today. Sorry, guys.
Okay, good. I don't want to talk about Ron. I don't want people to actually play Ron again. Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, the problem
is love
that
Ron.
I already am.
I don't.
I love Ron. Ron is, like, the actual reason to play Rhett. Anything else in the faction is just a sideshow to Ron, because Ron is the real game.
Ron is the epitome of a caster who can dig out of pretty much any game.
That's right.
There are very few situations where I don't think that I could play a game with Ron. And that's not arrogance, it's just I think that he is so versatile, so diverse, so effective at what he does, that you could really play him into a whole range of things. And
Ron is the master of plan shovel, except he's
that's mostly true, but I think there's a couple things in the game that make Ron go, oh, this is probably not for me.
Yeah. Stealth is the big one.
Stealth's the big one, and anybody who can go who has decently like fucked up high armor that can go, you can't touch me. No, I'm talking like maybe Nemo 3 and Doomy 3. I'm like the two people who are just like, Ron, we know you're really good, but something in this game has to say no.
That's right. And look, there's a few more too. Like
yeah, there is. Like Tibbers and
anything Rulik now is a big problem for Ron.
That's right.
Osram is a huge problem.
Osram is a gigantic problem for Ron. And I think that
And
like one of the things that I would say, like for Ran, who just has a ridiculous threat of like killing a caster, he doesn't have that Nemo 3 quality where it's just like I don't like my opponent still gets to interact with the game, like as much as it feels like it doesn't. You
no,
don't, when
sorry, Tom, I have played a game that was 40 minutes long and it was all Dylan's turn. That's not a game that it is. incredibly interesting to watch this game unfold as he unplans it and my models start moving and I'm not doing anything. But that is not an interactive game. I'm
sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
Yeah, I must admit, I was guilty of that at WDC, where I played a game where I had, I think, 15 seconds left on my clock and my opponent had 51 minutes. And he had played a single turn where he literally ran his army forward into mine and said, okay, off you go.
And then Dylan's like, I can kill you. Just give me, just give me 50 minutes.
And so many things went wrong. And then it was like, and this is what happens playing Ryan. One thing happens, it goes wrong, and you go, okay, that's fine. We can work around this, you know? In that game, it was twists and turns of Lanissa just had to hit a infiltrator in the back and she missed, so my Hearth Node couldn't run out without a free strike, and then you have to weigh up the benefits of taking the free strike versus moving your guys, not having the infiltrators to go up against the arcane shielded striker at the end. So you move your infiltrators and then you suddenly pull striker too far, and then you have to correct with a TK, and then the next battle mage has to line up just so perfectly. And That's Ryan. It's all about solving the problem. So yep. If you're an engineer, you should play Ryan, because you're going to be solving problems the whole game. And your opponent's going to be doing not much because you're playing the whole time.
And yeah. It's pretty good fun.
It is amazing fun. And it is one of those lists that gets deep.
We're describing a very degenerate game.
That's right.
But it's one of those classes that gets more, like, deeper the more you play. And I to fight your, like, sort of argument that he isn't interactive.
Okay, yeah, I'll like to hear this.
By comparison to something like a Nemo 3,
yeah.
Which is literally not asking
I hate Nemo 3, but
right.
Continue.
Which is not asking you to do anything more than exist on the table. Ryan really does get, like, really, Ryan really does suffer from excellent positioning, from terrain, from stealth. Like, there are a whole range of things that he can't just roll dice at to fix. And there are some games where he has to play very cagey, and you have to be super economical about what you offer up for piece trades, because the caster will just never get, you'll just never get aligned to the caster, and that is especially prevalent in 2017.
I agree. I think 2017 has hurt Ron's game.
I don't know if it hurt Ron's game. He just
by definition, it hurts his game.
It's much
because if it's
rolling.
A giant car park, Ron is like, this is my day, and none of you get to do anything.
As opposed to the days of Mark II, where you had four pieces of terrain and they were in separate quadrants of the field. Well, and I think it was in the middle, and I was just like, alright, so is this 20 inches, and have I rolled enough dice?
Well, it's also like, I'll just take the side of the table, which basically has all the terrain that you can hide behind, and then give you the first turn, because by top of two, you're going to have put your models in threat range for me to murder.
There are ways to play around Ron, but I could make arguments that there are ways to place your models to play into a Nemo game, because you can limit the amount of electrolytes.
Sure.
Yes, he can leap off his own shit, which is absolutely bullshit, and I hate it because it's fucking stupid. But, like, you can make the same argument about any list that seems overpowered, that if you play better than them, then yes.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Ron is a special kind of game, though, let's be honest.
Yeah, so his game has changed a little bit with Forges of War, because it used to be, if you just take a look at my WTC list that I ran, it contained a lot of niche elements that you wouldn't really include these days, like a Sphinx, for example, for an extra threat range.
Piece.
I remember
and
that thing.
I think I was playing IRIS-3 in that list as well.
With the infiltrators.
Men infiltrators, yeah.
And that, in my opinion, was the list that was perfect. The only thing that could make it better was if I could somehow squeeze Helios in there. But, like, if Helios was a heavy instead of a Colossus, that'd be perfect.
If that statement just rung true across the faction.
Yes. Or even just a toned down version.
Yeah.
But that would be fine. But yeah, sadly no. But that's essentially it. You could have a lot of moving pieces for the assassination, but these days it's more, well, you have the five heavies or the six heavies and you have the battle mages, that's it. So your angles are limited. I suppose you do have Iris still.
And she's free now, and both of us have talked about building lists to include her and to basically threaten that assassination or that lockdown a bit harder.
Yep.
Because she does both of those things. But I think one of the things that really does benefit this cast is he plays 2017 really well.
That's right. Quite excellent. Great on scenario.
Amazingly so.
And
He's a scenario lover. He will. The more alive it is, the more game
he
has.
And he loves going second, and he loves you trying to, like, just jockey a little bit of position by telling zones and things like that.
He's
and
like,
he'll just punish you for any, like, he'll punish you for aggressive play, and he'll punish you for cagey play.
Yeah.
And that's really strong.
He's
to
a very, very flexible caster that's very hard to play around because he's more flexible than you are. But he's wait, like, doesn't he's he like just... the Mr. Fantastic of flexibility.
But doesn't he just get shut down by Oren and Eilish in the same list together?
He doesn't get shut down, but if you're a smart player, you can definitely use those pieces to make his game really hard.
Which is why I think that thing, like, the way that Forge's build is incredibly powerful by running things like a Jack Marshall Hydra on the Artificer. I personally run a Hyperion on run because I just think it's a strong scenario piece, mm-hmm. and the gun is, like, turn by turn, fairly relevant. Yeah, like, some people will go for the option of a Helios and an Artifact and a Magister instead, and that's fine as well. It's just not in line with what I'm trying to achieve with that particular list.
It's also much harder to shut down the gun, because often you can engage the Hydras and stuff. It's hard to get them disengaged. Mm. But Hyperion just, like, walks up, goes, nope, bang, I'm going to take a shot.
Yep.
Try and block line of sight, son. I've got this 5-inch base.
Yep, gun. And it's, like, 30-odd percent of the time I'm going to just, like, obliterate a whole 5-inch pie plate. Yeah.
That's right.
And it's cool stuff.
It's also, it's just like, also, the thing that, to me, that's really frustrating about playing into Ron is that Ron just chucks his card on the table. It's like, I can do things. You're like, what things? Like,
that's hard to describe.
Yeah, he's like the type of caster where you, like, your opponent finishes their turn one, and they look down and it's like, do I die? And that's, like, a really serious question.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he doesn't have to ever commit on that. I mean, a lot of times he won't. Like, a lot of times you'll be waiting for the Sword of Damocles to drop, and Ryan just like, nah, I don't want to. And just shaves, like, three quarters.
And then he just giggles and turns like, around.
It's like, I don't have to yet. Or, like, for instance, if you want one of the, like, most least interactive games of War Machine ever, play Ryan into Karchev.
That was pretty gross.
Yeah. It was quite disgusting, because it's just like, okay, I put models on the table. Like, Ryan's like, oh, excellent. You put toys for me to play with. And you're just like, you feel like you've got no real personal input. But Ryan's also one of those guys where you have to pretty much know his shtick, how it works, to play with him and against him.
Yeah.
He doesn't help his army. You've got to realize that. So he struggles with a lot of high armor stuff. He helps
the army with his feet, kind of, maybe.
Well, see, that's almost. See, he provides a couple of boosts to the Battle Mages, but you wouldn't be seeing them
almost
anyway.
Almost kind of, maybe.
Yeah, almost kind of, maybe.
And TK as well, ish.
And
I mean, you're probably knocked down, so boosting their hit rolls doesn't matter that much anyway. They do get a bit of extra range, which helps on his feet turn.
The ultimate enabler, right? Yes. And that's what Ron and the Battle Mages are there for, is to enable a lot of work to happen, either on scenario or attrition on his feet turn, to kill the caster.
They need a list.
I'd say he's two. He's the enabler, and he's also...
He's the executioner, right?
Yeah, he's the executioner. He's spot removal incarnate. You can pick... Often with Ron, the game is... You pick one thing on the table. Don't pick two things. I've done the thing where I pulled in three heavies and left two of them alive. Just pick the one thing, right? Pick the one thing, kill it really well, push the other things away, shave off some inventory. That's it. That's your turn, right?
That's right. TK the other two away, and turn them around.
That's right. Yeah. So the two things
are... Or even force hammer one and...
That's right. Whatever. You pick one thing and try not to spend your feet if you... don't have to, because the feat is what allows you to kill your opponent. You can still kill them without the feat, but it gets a lot harder. You start to have to think about, oh, am I going to actually hit this TK, or do I have to boost it? Yep. You don't want to make those decisions. What you want to do is you want to feat, you want to get two TKs and a force hammer, and that's generally how you'll play Ryan.
Yep.
Most turns, it's two TKs and a force hammer, or a non-feat turn. Double chain blast. Yep, or double chain blast. On a non-feat turn, generally you're doing a boosted TK and a boosted force hammer.
Yep.
And that's it.
Right? And then maybe giving a Jack a focus.
Yeah. Maybe. Yep.
I mean, to be honest, he reminds me actually a lot of Old Witch 2. Very similar concept, right?
Yep.
With your feet, you can kill anyone. So therefore, hold your feet as long as possible, be as greedy as possible, or just know when to push to shove.
That's right.
And that might actually be a thing, is just you have to recognize when it actually is time to pull the trigger, because you might not be able to, despite all your bluster and your bullshit, you might not win the long game.
And, like, that is one of the big advantages, right? If you don't pull the trigger, like, generally, and you're not giving up anything, your opponent will kind of run around in circles being like, how do I survive the next turn?
Which is
a really strong game to play, and it adds that psychological element of the game of, like, always be afraid.
And if there's one thing, it's probably something I could close up, because I'm looking at this 22% on the ATC, and it's actually something that one of the best decisions we ever made as Team Australia was to allow Dylan to play Ron. The reason why is actually quite simple, because Ron is an amazing caster at a teams event, because if you're down and out and you need a win and you just need to dig deep, There's no better shovel than Ron. Like, there probably is no better shovel in the game than Ron for just digging a random assassination out if you have to go for it.
Yep.
And Dylan, we've got 2-2. Win the game now.
And it's like,
Dylan's like, okay, here comes the Ron button. Like, assassination is go. Sirens blaring.
Or more simply, like, you look down at your opponent's pairing and be like, I don't want to play either of these. I guess I'll go for Ron.
That's right. Like, that's
I don't want to play this game. There's like a million models. It's Gordon. And it's all disgusting. And there's like a million infantry. And they've got layered buffs. And it's too many model cards to read. I'll just kill them.
I'll just kill one model.
If I only pay attention to like one model and any of the models I'm shooting on the way to that one model, I don't need to focus on anything.
That's right. So Ron, sort of in conclusion, he just takes away your opponent's caster from the game.
Definitely.
So he does some things to the opponent's army and stops your opponent from using the caster at all. Because if they spend focus and if they don't position, like they keep some models back to protect their caster, they're going to die. So he is an equalizer and allows you to have a small advantage. And that's what enables him to beat most of the casters in the game if he's played well, is that he simply brings your opponent down to your level and then you play the game better than them because you've got slightly better than average infantry, slightly better than average jacks, and your cast is pitching in just a little bit.
You're the one who has all the autonomy in the game.
That's right. So he's like, if people have played Haley 2, he's similar to that in Haley 2 has TK, gives you a lot of threat range, options.
Doesn't she have Deadeye?
She does.
Used to, sir.
That's right. So you have so many things you can do. You just have to pick the most valuable one that you can do in a turn.
Yep.
Make sure that happens, right?
Yep.
So Ryan's the same sort of thing. And like Haley 2, you can kill your opponent's caster. I know that's all Josh ever did with Haley 2, right?
I mean, it's the thing you threaten to a lot of the time. And sometimes you just do have to pull the trigger. But if you can tell, like, I can kill your caster, your opponent will freak the fuck out.
Yeah, you have to realize that often killing two warjacks before your opponent and making sure your opponent can't kill any of yours is often just as good as killing your opponent.
You can kill them. You can always kill them later. Unlike Crombobulus Michael, who's just like,
oh, boy, here I go killing again.
Like, Ron is a patient man.
Yeah, and just to sort of finish that one out, the second you put a tape measure down between Ron and your opponent's caster, starts like a whole like level of them shitting their pants in their own head about like whether or not it's going to be this turn, whether or not it's now.
Even though Ron very rarely actually draws a line between himself directly and a caster.
It's usually through vectors and shit. Yeah, but it does have to be...
Very rarely. It happened a lot more when you had to measure the distance with your caster. Yes. Now we have like just pre-measuring.
Yeah, like Ron... I think it was back when the whole proxy debate thing over, like, multiple proxies. I loved your comment about this, Dylan, because you, as the habitual Ron abuser.
Yeah.
You made a... Repeat it for us. It was an amazing comment.
I can't remember exactly.
It was basically just like...
buff to Ron in the history of anything.
Yeah, and then when they decided, basically, it's just like, okay, we'll limit the proxies like one or two. It's just like, well, actually, like, I can still kill you anyway. The proxies aren't there for my benefit as the Ron player because you were already dead for showing up. The proxies were actually there for your benefit, so that you could come to terms with your imminent and quite horrible demise.
It's true. It is true.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy.
He is a cool guy.
And he continues to be cool.
I honestly recommend playing him. Obviously, Forges is quite his home. I do think that he does bear some exploration in other themes, probably Defenders-ish. He loses a lot of his cool factor, and it's like...
He loses his feet.
That's the big
enabling piece, right?
Well, the assassination, it's huge. The first thing you measure when you start the assassination run is, are they within 22 inches of any of my battle mages? That's your threat range, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if you don't have battle mages, then
you can't really fit.
Right? So take Forges, take either Iris or Eilish. Eilish is good because you
pull puppet strings
and you pull a lot of stuff into your army. So he's almost always going to be able to get his spells off, like, for example, strip upkeeps, and in the correct order. So you pull them in, strip upkeeps, then your Drax kill stuff.
Yeah.
So he is useful, but I would recommend P. Iris and just take
fire. Valuing things like Force Blast and Mango Blast are exactly. pretty powerful.
Play them for a scenario, just be like, oh yeah, this game I'm going to win by scenario. I've done that plenty of times when you just look at your Predator army and go, that's a Colossal I can't kill. So I'll sacrifice 3 Drax and try and win a scenario. I think that's like to you, Chris. Yeah.
You did, yeah. It's basically, I set up, after a long series of learning how to play against Ron, I set up the anti-Ron wall for Vlad and you're just like, wow, that's so much effort.
Yeah, so
how
about I just I can't like, kill you. I said, it just cannot be done.
And like, okay, cool. I'm like, yes, I did it. And it's just like, alright, I'm going to win on scenario. Like, God damn it. Alright, and I guess on that PTSD note, we've probably come to a conclusion about what to do with Rhett. Play Ron.
Play Assyria, play Virus, give Alara the old college try. Like, there's only a few dodges in the faction, right?
Gary.
A lot of it, honestly, just play the lists. Probably. Like, and just try a couple of the casters, see how they go. Yep. Like, don't play Crumbobulus, Michael, because, like,
play
please.
Ron. Get good.
You can play Ron and can get good.
Yeah.
I mean, Ron really does require you to get good. That is, there is a high skill ceiling, but there is also a...
There's also
a high skill bottom. Because I remember teaching Dylan to play the game, and Ron was like the point where like, oh, this guy's garbage. Look at Dylan just constantly losing. And then he started winning, and we're like, oh god, what have we done?
But I definitely think, like, just to sort of finish out on my part, is that I feel like, particularly at the moment, and particularly the sentiment that's floating around, is that this faction is not in a good place. And I would really like to take the moment to just reflect on how silly that is.
Yes.
It's in a good place.
I think shows... Is it still the best list in the game?
It exists among some of the most flexible lists. It, just like Forges, exists in that range of flexibility, and you are good at problem solving. With those lists, like
I think it's almost the best list in the game. Still,
I would disagree, but I also don't think it matters. Like you hit it right on the nail when you said flexibility. Like, don't try and play Rhett with the idea that you're going to remake Mad Dog spam because, that's not how Rhett works. Don't try and play Rhett with the idea that you're just going to throw all the dice on the table until your opponent just gets buried under them.
You're not playing Kador.
And you're not playing
don't treat them like Kador because that's not how
they're
playing.
You're also not playing Krix. You've got to acknowledge that you don't have a lot of safety nets a lot of other factions have. Like, you don't have recursion. You don't have just tanky.
Tough. You don't have tough.
You don't have tough action. Apart from the Nyss.
You don't have tough.
You
tough,
definitely
Ryan.
Don't have tough. Tough.
Nyss have
do,
tough.
But you don't.
Oh.
Yeah. Right, the Nyss defenders have tough. Yes, they're real models.
Okay.
Real pieces of shit, Morty.
Yeah, look, to be honest...
Tough is, like, the basic, most forgiving rule. They're like, oh, did you lose a model? Well, here's a free dice roll to see if it survives.
Yeah, you don't have any of that nonsense, so you've got to appreciate what you do have, which is just a lot of really flexible models that are best in class.
It's unforgiving.
Yeah.
That's right, and it's a very combined arms approach. You're back to the days of your Jack isn't going to kill their Jack, so don't pretend it is.
Give it some help.
It needs help, and it needs a decent amount of help, especially when you're looking at a lot of sixes that you have to hit.
Yep.
Except when it's a Jack Marshalled
Siren.
No, let's stop repeating that, because I feel like people are going to catch on. People realize how strong it is. And then it won't be a thing anymore.
Can I point to the game where I put that crushed, fully loaded, concentrated power Hydra into a knockdown Typhon, and it survived on, 8 boxes?
That feels like dice didn't
that feels like you. That feels like you fucked up somehow.
Yeah. Clearly.
But
double one.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So it will happen and it will suck. But I mean, that's just how Rhett goes at the end of the day. Like, you play around, you've got to give yourself a wire safety net for your turn by turn plans. So, for example, that's why I said with Ron, pick a model and kill it, pick a heavy, kill it.
Maybe have a backup plan if you get too successful, but don't push your luck.
That's right, yeah. Don't activate that second unit of Battle Mages to pull in the second heavy unless you killed the first one accidentally, right?
Yes.
That's how the game kind of works. And if you have that little bit of extra left over, you throw away those attacks if you have to keep your model safe. Mm-hmm. That's how you generally play Red. Very safe. You're the elitist,
same
right?
Paper.
That's right.
You are the 22%.
That's right. You are the 22%. You stay there. Just don't let the guys touch your stuff.
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
And I think on that note, we'll probably close it for tonight.
We'd like to thank Dylan for coming back for a year and a half. and we'd like to thank Tom coming on for his first.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh,
Oh, it's fun. It's good times.
It's good for us to relive all those great memories.
Yeah, how many times I've died to Retribution.
To both of our Retributions.
Yeah, I mean, I did get to reminisce all the times I used to beat Dylan, so that was fun.
Even the times I had to play in a Mage Hunter theme, just the increasingly improbable Mage Hunter Raven theme.
See, that was never a problem as a Trollcaster.
True.
Yeah, that was
just got the Ron treatment every time, because that was the only thing I could figure out to beat. But
then I got Doomy 3 and I was like, I am in heaven. and then Mark 3 happened and I stopped playing Trolls.
Doomy 3 was the worst.
Oh, I do not miss that Mark 2 caster. Oh boy.
All right.
Cool.
In any case, thank you guys for listening and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Boom.